Network.
Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it in bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Bill Scheer from the Campaign for America's Future. We're going to be talking about next Tuesday's State of the Union address and what will be addressed. Many are speculating there could be some discussion of privatizing Social Security coming from the president. That, I think, would be a very, very bad thing, especially for his reelection. And as we've been seeing it taking the, not just a turn to the right, an about face going way to the extreme right. So that ought to be an interesting conversation. Also, Stacey Ritter, a mother of two young girls who, horrible, horrible illnesses. Filed bankruptcy, lost their home. The story is heartbreaking. And some of the, take a look at the video, of her over at thericksmithshow.com, and some of the pictures of these children and what they went through. And then imagine being a parent having to watch that and worrying about if those kids, when they recover, if they'll have a place to come home to. This is what this healthcare bill was about. And this is what this security is what the Republicans want to take away from parents like Stacey Ritter, from parents like all of us. Because, you know, in the story she's going to tell, because I've heard it a couple of times, they had health insurance. They were doing all the right things. And then massive illness hit these two young girls. They were four, I believe, at the time. And just devastating. So we'll talk to her about what happened with them. Also, State Representative Sid Michael Kabulich, from a little bit up north here, going to talk about him. And a press release I got, I couldn't believe it, the title of the press release, Blue Collar Workers Have a Voice in Harrisburg. Say it isn't so, especially with all the talk of e-Twizzlers and all the, we need to be more business friendly. Need to be more business friendly. And in that vein, I don't know if you noticed, if you saw, the president was in Schenectady, New York today, the birthplace of General Electric. He was showing off GE's facility and the deal with India, and announced a restructuring of the presidential advisory board to focus on increasing employment and competitiveness. Ironically, it's the place that has lost 40,000 General Electric jobs over the past few decades. So it's kind of odd that the president named CEO of GE Jeffrey Immelt as the head of the Council on Jobs and Competitiveness. He's replacing his old board, his old Economic Recovery Advisory Board, with this new one, the Council on Jobs and Competitiveness. Former Federal Reserve Chairman Paul Volcker will be stepping down. Understand, Volcker is the rich man's hero. He's the guy during the late 70s, early 80s who stopped inflation, ushering in this war on inflation and a war that he won for the investor class. But in a statement, the president said that the council's mission will be to help generate ideas from the private sector to speed up the economic growth and promote American competitiveness. Quote, we will have a long way to go, and my number one priority is to ensure we are doing everything we can to get the American people back to work, the president said. I got to be honest, I don't know that Imelt is the guy that I would want to be in charge of putting Americans back to work. Remember, this is the guy who, when he looked into the future and he saw GE's future, he said, I see China, China, China. So why are we putting a guy who's an outsourcer? Why are we putting a leading outsourcing CEO as the lead guy on creating American jobs and a strategy to do that? I don't know. There have to be better choices. Maybe Imalt's former boss, Jack Welch, maybe him, who was the one who led us down the Chinese path. Or maybe former Dow Chemical CEO, who during the 80s said he yearned to put his headquarters on an island so he wouldn't be beholden to any nation or society. He could just be a for-profit corporation. Maybe that would have been a better guy than Imelt. Maybe the guy who was the head of Ford back in 95, who said Ford isn't even an American company. Strictly speaking, of course. He says we're global. We're investing all over the world. Our managers are multinational. Teach them to think and act globally, which means screw you American workers. Back in 2006, why not this guy, the former Cisco CEO, who said, quote, what we're trying to do is outline an entire strategy to become a Chinese company. Maybe he would have been a better choice. Why don't we just admit that we're giving it all away? Just say, here, take it. You know, we'll wrap it up in a nice little bow. Because I can't think of another company who has outsourced more jobs than GE. Maybe you can. Can you? Can you come up with another company that's closed as many factories here in this country as GE? I can't. You know, GE used to be a major U.S. employer. They now employ less than 150,000 people in this country. Where'd all those jobs go? Is our technology so advanced that we don't need people anymore? Are those 150,000 people so productive that, you know, those jobs are just eliminated? Of course not. They spread some 300,000 jobs all over the globe to take advantage of cheap labor. Exploitable labor. Exploitable environment. And look, that's how the game's set up. And every company is out there doing it. But don't put this guy in charge of job creation, because we know where the jobs will be going. He told you right from the beginning, when I looked at GE's future, I see China, China, China. In a speech in Detroit back in 2009, he railed against Buy American provisions. Yet his company does business in China and France and other places that have domestic content restrictions, that have domestic preference choices, where they're saying, you know what, in order to participate in our economy, you've got to build your product locally. That's the only way we're going to buy it. And what do? They move jobs from the good U.S. of A, and they take them right there. Why? They want the business. But it's not okay for us to say that. It's not okay for us to go, you know what, GE, if you want to build those windmills, oh, you want to build them? You want to build your products and sell them here? They should be made here. Now, here's a guy who wrote an op-ed today in the Washington Post saying that, you know, trade enforcement isn't about erecting barriers. No, no. Well, then explain to me how we enforce trade. If someone like China is choosing to subsidize their industries, is choosing to undervalue their currency, is choosing to do all of the things that we see as trade barriers, why can't we erect the same thing? Why can't we do what they're doing? Why do we have to be the one to absorb the brunt? Well, because the CEO class here at GE and the investor class, they're making money. And they're making lots of it. Now remember, this guy has been on the side of, and full head of steam on the side of, two of the biggest things that have brought our country to its knees. Deregulation of the financial sector and allowing China into the World Trade Organization. This guy was one of the chief cheerleaders for both of those. And look what's happened. Look what's happened in instances. You and I, we have lost. So the policies that this guy, this iMelt, has supported has cost us a third of our manufacturing base. A third. In the last decade alone, 50,000 factories gone. Nearly $250 billion in wages gone. Massive. The largest trade deficit with anybody with the Chinese, other than our petroleum problems. The worst decade of manufacturing in the history of this country. And we're putting this guy in charge. This is the guy we want. This is the guy we say, yep, yep. This is the guy that's going to take us down the right path. Look, there are a lot of things we should be doing. This guy isn't it. We need to eliminate our trade deficits. And I've been saying that from the day I sat in this chair. And how you do that is you enforce your trade policies. You go after the Chinese. You promote Buy American. You promote America. You know, our trade policies are about as fair as the Patriot Act is patriotic. It's not. You want to encourage job growth in this country? You want to encourage business growth? Invest in our cooling infrastructure. You know, it took real vision and leadership to build the Hoover Dam. It took smart policy to build the Golden Gate Bridge. It took business savvy to construct the Erie Canal. Where is our generation of leaders? Where's our vision? We need high-speed rail. We need more public transportation. We need a power grid to meet the demands of this next generation and beyond. Faster universal broadband. Oh, that'd be nice. And tons more stuff. Who's doing those things? The Chinese. Why? Because you got guys like iMelt who's going, we're going to move our factory. We're going to move our innovation, our research and development. That's where we're going to go. We need to consume the stuff we're producing, folks. Simple. When we build high-speed rail, and I pray we do, it's got to be built with American material and craftsmen. We need to reinvest here. We need to promote investment here. R&D innovation should be done here. Our tax code should be reformed. Reward the people who stay. Reward them. But that doesn't seem to be what we're doing. And if you put someone like iMelt in charge, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Jake. I am just not getting it. I'm just not getting what this president's doing, man.
Well, we talked about this before. We hope a lot of this is symbolic. I think what he's trying to do is give these people a push. But publicly, I mean, you said it. It seems like he's almost begging these people to start creating jobs in this country.
They're sitting on piles of cash. The last I heard, $3 trillion.
$3 trillion.
Sitting on it. We're giving out massive interest-free loans because we have this, and we're going to talk about inflation a little bit today because I think it's important. There has been this war on inflation that is killing the American worker. It's benefiting the investor class, but it's killing us. And it's just what the iMelts, and it's just what the corporate CEOs, just what they want. And they want us focused on the dumb stuff. I'm telling you right now, this scumbag in Philadelphia over this abortion case, this criminal, this no good, he is going to spark another debate over abortion, and important things like this are not going to see the light of day. And by the time we start and wake up and see what's happened, it's going to be too late. We're already going to be screwed. I'm telling you. Mark my words.
No. If I can make one comment, I think the president, I'm not making excuses for him. I think he's doing it the wrong way, but I think he believes that in order to get reelected, he has to bring down the unemployment rate. That's obvious. And to do that, we have to create some jobs. I think his gut is, Rick, to give him some credit. I think his gut is he'd like a second stimulus, and he looks around and says, there's no way I can get it. Where can I get it? Well, maybe I can massage, and that's basically what he's doing, massage big business to, you know, release some of that money here in the United States. You know, I hope he's successful. I'm very skeptical of it, though.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, we're going to talk with Bill Scheer from the Campaign for America's Future. I'm really curious what this State of the Union address is going to address. We're right back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The Supreme Court ruled on Wednesday that background checks scientists and other government contract workers do not violate constitutional privacy rights. After the September 11, 2001 attacks, background checks were extended to companies and universities that play a role in projects funded by the government. The court overturned a previous ruling by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that said the background checks of contractors were a violation of privacy. Justice Samuel Alito wrote on behalf of the court that the government has wide latitude when it deals with employees, and that includes contract workers. However, Scalia and Justice Clarence Thomas went further by writing a concurring opinion suggesting informational privacy is a right that does not exist. Scalia went on to challenge the concept of informational privacy rights, calling the idea farcical. He wrote that there is no right deeply rooted in our history and tradition that bars the government from ensuring that the Hubble telescope is not used by recovering drug addicts. The case before the Supreme Court was brought by 28 veteran scientists and researchers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. Since August 2009, workers have been in negotiations with a number of hotels in San Francisco. One of those hotels is San Francisco's Grand Hyatt. The workers, represented by Unite Here Local 2, on Tuesday, gathered to let their concerns be known. The hotel has been the focus of strike action and boycotts, with the union charging that Hyatt hasn't bargained in good faith while trying to reach a fair contract. The two sides are scheduled to meet again on February 1st as negotiations head into the 16th month. The union has also launched a boycott against Hilton Hotels in San Francisco. Some of the issues the workers are working toward in negotiations with the hotels are a fair pension, affordable health care, and reasonable workloads. Greensboro, North Carolina received tough employment news on Wednesday when American Express announced it would be shuttering a service center. The result of the closure will impact 1,900 workers. American Express Senior Vice President Bob Geringer tried to put a positive spin on the closure in a memo to employees. We have 1,900 people who are affected by this decision, and therefore we have 1,900 possibilities. Many of the workers could end up being transferred to other U.S. service centers or possibly work from home.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every... To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
State of the Union address is coming up. I think it's next Tuesday, I believe, and some congressional members are lining up their dates for the event. Pennsylvania Senior Senator Bob Casey evidently is going to be taking the Senator from Wall Street, Pat Toomey, and in a sign of commitment, they'll be sitting together. How nice. Seriously, though, I guess this is a good thing. It's kind of like marriage counseling. You ever see those really heated marriage counseling sessions where if they can't sit next to each other for an hour, it's probably over? Well, this is probably exactly where we're going. And the question I have is, what will the president choose to focus on? What issues will he highlight? That's why I've asked our friend Bill Scheer from the Campaign for America's Future to talk about what he sees as the major themes in Tuesday's big speech. Bill, welcome to the program.
Always great to be on. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking to this, and one of my big fears is that we're going to see the president start talking about some privatization of Social Security.
Well, privatization I'm not concerned about. The bigger concern is that he might propose some cuts to Social Security benefits, and that's what a lot of folks in the progressive movement have been organizing around and trying to communicate to the White House now before Tuesday to say, this is bad policy, this is bad politics, you will shatter your own coalition, you will anger the independents that you want to reach out to, you might even anger Tea Party folks, because our polling shows that across the board, no one wants the benefits cut at all. Hopefully this message is getting to the White House. We don't know what the president wants to say on the subject. I don't want to presume what's going on in his head on it, but he certainly is, there's been signals that they're thinking about what to say about Social Security. And the time is now to call the White House. We have a petition up at ourfuture.org. Don't wait for the speech to make your voice on the subject, because if we organize now, we could possibly ward them off from doing something that would be very politically catastrophic.
Yeah, I mean, because at the end of this, you know, I'm dead set against raising the age any higher than it already is. I'm dead set against any cuts at this point. The reality is there are other ways to shore it up that I think are both sane and reasonable besides cutting and raising the age.
Well, if you go back to the president's own words on the subject, I mean, everything that he has publicly said about Social Security is perfectly fine. He has said that it's not in crisis. He said that there are mild things that can be done to shore up its long-term solvency. And the only thing, he has explicitly rejected cutting benefits. He's rejected adjusting the cost of living formula to make it weaker for CURV retirees. He has rejected raising the retirement age for younger workers. And he has said the thing that he does support is raising the payroll tax cap, which it makes the tax we all pay on Social Security a regressive tax. So if the more money you make, the less tax you pay, percentage-wise. That's the one thing that Obama has supported, and most folks on the left are comfortable with that. The concern is that he might go beyond his past statements and embrace what his deficit commission proposed, which included raising the retirement age and included the cost of living adjustments that would, cut benefits for current retirees. That's the concern that he might change his view in the State of the Union address. But again, no one knows. He has not made any signals. He has not floated trial balloons. It's actually a very interesting case where usually you have a good idea what a president's going to say in the State of the Union address. It's usually not totally out of left field. But we really just don't know what he's going to say.
Well, what we do know is we know what some of the people who were on his commission were saying.
Yeah.
You know, I just saw a thing with Alice Rifkin the other night talking about this very thing, and that's something that absolutely has to be done in order for us to balance the budget, in order for us to cut the deficits. We absolutely have to do this. And do you think it's possible that he could be buying into the conservative mean of we need to do this just to balance our budget, basically balancing the budget on the backs of those who could least afford it?
Well, I know that he doesn't believe that, because if you read the actual Simpson-Bowles Commission report, which is different than what they say on TV, mind you, when you read the actual report, they admit that Social Security has nothing to do with the deficit. It is a separate issue. It does not contribute one penny to the deficit, and they made a point of saying, we're not balancing the budget on the backs of Social Security retirees. This is its own separate solvency issue.
Well, then why were they talking about it?
That's a fantastic question. Now, I mean, if you literally did nothing on Social Security, the trust fund would run out in 2037. That's not the same as it going bankrupt and you get nothing.
Right.
Because there's current taxes going into Social Security all the time. So the absolute worst case scenario, if we literally did nothing, which no one thinks would actually happen, would be that instead of getting 100% of your benefits in 2037, you would get 75%. Now, that's not a good outcome, but it's not bankruptcy. It's not the whole thing imploding. And so what the Simpson-Bowles Commission is saying is, since we don't want this benefit cut to happen, here's a benefit cut. So it's not exactly If benefits are so bad, then why are they embracing one? So that's what the commission has proposed. And since they have proposed that, there is no nationwide clamor to do it. Thing, if you know, you could say I'm unnerved that Obama picked these people and that's what they came back with, but they came back with something that the public has rejected.
Right.
Poll after poll after poll, you know, and not just polls. You know, Campaign for America's Future has commissioned some of these polls, but CBS New York Times poll just today said people do not want to see Social Security benefits cut. They're okay with the taxes going up, and they didn't even ask in this poll, mind you, that would only be on the. On those making over $100,000 a year, but that's what it would be if you raise the payroll tax cap. But they're comfortable with that. They're not comfortable with the benefit cuts. So you went through this whole rigmarole to have a bipartisan commission to show that if the two parties could come together around some idea, and that usually gives it some extra political juice. There's no political juice with this proposal. So hopefully that is clear within the White House and the reelection campaign, saying, you know what, these guys gave it their best shot, and they struck out.
Yeah, I agree. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Bill Scheer from the Campaign for America's Future. Ourfuture.org is the website. Lots of good stuff over there. What I'm hoping he will focus on is the thing that I think we've been needing, I don't know, since he took office, and that's jobs. That's a smart trade policy, and that's someone who's going to stand up to China. That's what I think we should be focusing on.
Well, we've already seen the president make a couple of speeches which seem to be previews and themes. And they have been about jobs. They've not been about Social Security. And he's talked about the Sputnik moment that America now faces. That in the 50s, when the Soviet Union launched their Sputnik satellite, that was a wake-up call to America that we were not engaging in global competitiveness. We're not investing in our own innovation and our own cutting-edge industries. And we have to play and send a man to the moon. That's how we that Sputnik moment in the 50s. And now we face that again with China and with Europe getting ahead of us in clean energy and other high-tech fields. And if we don't do this public investment to create jobs and to research and to innovate, we're going to fall behind. But we don't have to do that, and it's not in the American spirit. So he is that basic theme that I think most folks in the progressive movement and the labor movement and the broad middle of the country, I think, already embrace. I think the president has already said he gave a Sputnik moment speech last month. He did it again. It's connected to New York today. I expect we're going to like the theme that he is giving. But the question then becomes, will the policies that follow it match the rhetoric? And that's when you push on.
Yeah, and since you brought up Schenectady today, you know, this appointing Jeffrey Immelt to the head of his commission, I don't know if that sends the right message. It doesn't send the right message to me. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
I'm personally not one. You know, we have one on our site, ourfuture.org, is Scott Paul, who heads the Alliance for American Manufacturing, and he was not pleased at all with the pick. The GE is a terrible example. They outsource jobs. They're not an example of how we can, be a 21st century economic power. And I don't dispute what Scott Paul is saying. Be that as it may, I am not one to overemphasize staff picks. Obama's the guy at the top. He sets the policy. He tells his staff what he wants. And by all accounts, over the past 2 years, he has a range of views within his administration. He lets them hash it out, and he makes the call. But like it or not, I don't think he's being led by the nose by anybody. All the people who are really living at Rahm Emanuel, for example, Rahm Emanuel didn't want to do health care reform at all. He thought it was a political loser. And Obama said, thank you very much for your advice. I'm doing it anyway. And you better salute and do your job and follow what I'm saying. And to Rahm's credit, he did. So, I don't love everything that Immelt has to say, but I also know that he has other economists on his team, like Jared Bernstein, who I like a lot more. And Obama's going to hear stuff from all sides, and I will judge Obama based on what he does himself, not what the staffers have to say.
That's an interesting way of looking at it, and it's personally, I looked at it and I said, this is moving, as Clinton did, moving more to the center, more to the right, in my opinion. But we, as you say, we will see how this it works itself out.
Paul Begala made a great point about that this week, because everyone got really angry with Clinton when he brought in Dick Morris, who's probably one of the most loathsome political operatives on the planet, after the Republican takeover of Congress in 1994. But as Begala said, you know, Clinton actually didn't take any of Dick Morris's ideas, where Clinton made us stand on protecting Social Security and Medicare. And that's how we got back in the good grace of the American public. So, you know, a good leader, you know, might, you know, hear a view from someone who might even be completely execrable. But a good leader, you know, sorts out the good advice from the bad and makes the right calls.
So other than the economy and possibly something on Social Security, what else do you see him talking about?
Well, I mean, I'm sure he's going to talk about green jobs in particular. And I'm curious, actually, if he really goes and explains what he's going to do about global warming, because the EPA is already issuing greenhouse gas regulations, and Republicans are ready to attack them as being job-killing regulations. And I think it's incumbent upon him to make the connection that this is not putting a burden on the American economy. These are creating incentives that are going to create jobs, and we can do it in a way that does not decimate coal, does not decimate oil, where people are already working in those industries in America. We can have a smooth transition, which still has a place for those industries and doesn't unnerve folks in a lot of industrial parts of the country. And interestingly, Jeff Immelt is someone who has embraced that argument, who has said what business wants is regulatory certainty. Global warming is happening, but it's uncertain where this is all going to go, and that's what makes business freeze up. And Republicans always complain about this, but they complain about it because they don't like the regulations that are being proposed. Whereas if they actually got it with the program, we would just pass them, and the certainty would exist. You know, Immelt is someone who has embraced that argument. So here's someone, if a guy who the Chamber of Commerce loves so much is out there saying, you know what, we can create jobs with the real climate policy, that might be unassailable.
Good point. For me, I've made the argument all along that if the EPA was going to do it, why did we need cap and trade? Because we've already got the ability to do it. Why do we need to create a billionaire's market for it?
Well, I think the EPA has some authority under the Clean Air Act to cut emissions. But what they've said is, you know, everything that we can do would probably cut emissions by 5%, and we really got to get it more like 17%. But we can at least get the ball moving. And as a political problem, it's harder to do this in a way that the transition would be smoothest if you can really coordinate with coal and with oil and with nuclear and with biofuels, and create some subsidies where you ensure that folks are not going to be unnecessarily displaced, and the EPA doesn't have all the tools they can do that under the Clean Air Act. So that's why you got to do something, ideally, that's a little more comprehensive. But you can start moving, and we don't have the luxury to sit around because, you know, the climate is going to do what it's going to do.
Right. Last question I've got for you. What do you think the Republican response is going to be? I'm picturing, you know, my two-year-old with her fingers in her ear kicking and screaming.
Well, it's going to be Paul Ryan, House Budget Chair, someone who has gotten this bizarre reputation of being a true fiscal truth-teller, when in reality, it's just one lie after another. And if you watched during the healthcare debate this week, he was just lying up a storm about the Congressional Budget Office, which has said that repealing healthcare reform would jack up the deficit by $230 billion in 10 years. So I would expect, if you wanted to have a drinking game, how many times this guy repeats previously debunked lies, you will be on the floor before his 10 minutes are up.
No, which is why I had a problem with Anthony Weiner last night, saying, look, you know, it's irresponsible. They're going to be a bunch of college kids who are no longer going to be able to go to school because they're going to be drunk. But that'll probably be okay because the Republicans want to take their money away from them so they won't be able to go to school.
That's about right. But, you know, Paul Ryan is a bit of a smooth presence, so I don't think he's going to do as bad a job as, say, Bobby Jindal did, but that's a low bar to clear.
Yeah.
Everyone should have their fact checkers out. You know, you should go to Political Fact, you should go to Think Progress, you should go to the Huffington Post, you know, 5 minutes after the speech. I'm sure all the debunking will be happening in short order.
Yeah, I can't wait. Bill, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. I'll share from the Campaign for America's Future, ourfuture.org. I appreciate you having me coming on.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
You could always speak your mind. You worked so hard to say what's right. I watched you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Thank you, California. And you too, Florida, Maine, Missouri, and 32 other states that intend to send a very special gift to Texas, namely their radioactive waste. Now there's a gift that truly keeps on giving. Of course, Texas asked for it. Well, actually, only two Texans. They had the clout to open a private radioactive waste dump in our state. First approved in 2003, the 1,300-acre site, which endangers freshwater aquifers that supply water to thousands of people in West Texas, was originally meant to take waste from just two states. But now, thanks to this pair of insistent Texans, the dump is being opened to 36 more states. Who are these dump-on-Texas enthusiasts? One is a right-wing Dallas billionaire named Harold Simmons. He's chairman of a corporation named Waste Control Specialists. WCS's specialty is hustling government contracts for its own fun and profit. Indeed, Simmons' outfit is the sole company in the whole USA to be licensed by the Texas Environmental Agency to import this waste into our state. Now, from stage right, enters Rick Perry, the Texas governor who rose from being a Texas A&M cheerleader to leading cheers for the Simmons dump. Why is Perry so petty for radioactive waste? Because Simmons is his second largest campaign money man, having dumped $500,000 into the governor's re-election effort last loan. Only 2 months after November's election, the commission overseeing radioactive waste disposal voted on January 4th to increase the profitability of Simmons' dump by letting him haul in waste and profits from 36 more states. All six Texans on the commission were appointed by Perry. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you're keeping score on this exciting game of quid pro quo politics, it's $500,000 for Perry, untold millions for Simmons, and zero for the people.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Yes. My girl there, Michelle, she's got a new title. She's the queen of BS, I guess, according to the people at PolitiFact. She has been checked 13 times for her statements. Now, this is a woman who has almost no credibility. Honestly and truthfully, there's no credibility with her. She's a bomb thrower. That's what gets her the front page. That's what gets people's attention. The problem is nothing she says is reality. But anyway, they've checked her 13 times. 7 of her claims have been false, and 6 have been found to be ridiculously false, according to PolitiFact editor Bill Adair. So, she's weird things like, you remember the time where she said, President Obama is going to India, and it's going to cost the American taxpayer $200 million a day. And you go, really? $200 million a day? Not even close. We don't even spend that much per day in Afghanistan. If she wanted to be concerned about $200 million a day, the $190 million a day we spend in Afghanistan might be a good place to start. But she has had some really big whoppers. But that's why I like her, because she's crazy. I love crazy. Crazy's good. Anyway, Tuesday, the State of the Union address. Paul Ryan's going to be the guy giving the Republican version of it. He is the House Budget Committee Chairman. He's no doubtedly going to be touting this radical roadmap for America's future. Under which the U.S. budget will eventually be balanced. You ask how? He said, by privatizing Social Security and Medicare, of course. According to an analysis by Citizens for Tax Justice, the Ryan's ridiculous roadmap would be a giant U-turn on Obama policies. Because, the president has cut taxes on 95% of us. Ryan wants to increase taxes on about 90% of us. And like a good Republican, dramatically lower the taxes on the millionaires and billionaires, because they have this ideology. They have this strange belief structure that if we give all the money to the people at the top, It will flow down like rivers of gold and honey, caressing our body, making us whole. I've seen this yellow river coming down. Smells kind of salty. Has nothing to do with gold or, I think gold is one way of putting it. There's, you know, a bath that they usually talk about. But here's the thing. You and I will see higher taxes under this guy's roadmap. They're saying that middle class families, according to the Economic Policy Institute, middle class families earning between $50,000 and $75,000 a year would see your average tax rate jump to 19.1%, up from a little over 17.5%. So you're talking about $900 a year coming out of your pocket for people making $50,000 to $75,000. Now flip that around. What are the millionaires and billionaires getting? They're going to see their average tax rate dropped down to 12.8%. Massive, massive amounts of money flowing into their pockets. And again, I go back to this Republican meme, and we've heard it over and over and over and over again, that the reason of the government, not our government, the government, the reason the government is in such big trouble is they spend too much. You've heard it, but for several months now. Too much spending. Too much spending. They spend too much money. They take care of those people. They fix roads and they police the streets and they put out fires and they answer the phone at the 911 place. And how dare they? We need to cut spending. Cut spending. Cut spending. It's not a revenue thing. How many times have we heard that?
Well, to show you how that, I mean, Ryan, I mean, wow. I've heard of tax breaks for the rich, but listen to this. Under his plan, if you make $3 million or more, unbelievably, under his plan, you would get a tax break of $1.7 million.
Yay!
At the same time, but it gets better. At the same time, he wants to eliminate corporate taxes. I mean, what world are these people living in?
They have this bizarre belief that the captains of industry, the Jeffrey Immelts of the world, the CEO class will look down upon us and take care of us. If we give them everything they could possibly want. Here is all of the wealth of the nation. You are the stewards of wealth. That somehow they're gonna create jobs. And I go back to this, and I've said this before, and if anybody has an idea of me being wrong on this, I'd love to hear it. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. No one's ever given me a job. No one's ever said, Rick, I like you so much, I'm going to give you a job. It's never happened to me. What's happened to me is I've applied for a job, and a guy's looked at me across the table and said, you know what? I can make money off of you. I make money off of your labor. And I can make more money than I'm willing to pay you, so I can put some in my pocket and pay you. That's how jobs are created. When someone looks at you, I can make money off you. When there's a demand. So if you make widgets, there's got to be a demand for widgets. And the problem is we have a demand problem, a revenue problem. People are not putting as much money in their pockets. Why? Because it's all flowing to the top. And if you go back and you look at this whole argument that the Republicans are ramming down our throats and the mainstream media keep ramming down our throats, well, we spend too much. No, we're not bringing enough in to cover the costs of the things that we need and want. That's the difference. And when you look at the tax rates from the 50s till today, whose taxes went up, whose taxes went down? My taxes went up. Warren Buffett's taxes plummeted down from 92% down to below 15%. Tell me that we have a spending problem when you're talking about the richest man in the world who saw a tax break from 91 down to, I believe he said 17%. So from 91% that he used to have to pay down to 17%. You want to know where that revenue went? Debt. We spent the same amount of money. We're just borrowing it instead of saying we want it from Warren Buffett, that it's his responsibility. And it's that simple. That simple, Jake.
And there's one thing I did forget. Now, he wants to, in his infinite wisdom, he wants to eliminate corporate taxes and replace it with something he calls a business consumption tax. And what happened? They pass it on basically as a value-added tax to consumers, which would impact on who, for the most part? Low income.
Well, I'm in favor of a value-added tax. You're talking about a sales tax. You're talking about a national sales tax. I'm actually in favor of a value-added tax.
It's a form of a value-added tax. He doesn't call it that. But let me ask you, who would that impact? Call them consumers. That would impact regressively most on who? Low income.
We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Executive Director of CAIU on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality union and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. For all of my death penalty fans, all the people who are right there, let's juice them! Well, let's stick the needle in their arm. Today is a sad day. Sad day for you. Hospira Incorporated, the only U.S. manufacturer of one of the drugs used in lethal injection, is halting production of a drug over a controversy in Europe about its use of the capital punishment drug. Many U.S. states have already run out of sodium thiopental. Today's decision by Hospira could further delay the executions. Hospira has suspended production in 2009, but planned to start it up earlier this year at its facility in Italy. The Italian government, however, ordered the company to make certain that they would no longer manufacture the drug for the sole purpose of executions. So the company said, well, we can't make that claim, so we're going to stop making it altogether. And, you know, you go back, and I'm not a death penalty fan, but this is another one of those examples of a trade policy of an American company, giving up some of its sovereignty, some of its rights overseas. Interesting thing. I came across a really, really interesting blog post. The guy named Rick Unger, he wrote this piece on socialized medicine that I thought was fantastic. And he wrote, the ink was barely dry on the Patients Protection and Affordable Care Act when the first of many lawsuits to block the mandated health insurance provision of the law was filed in Florida court. Because you remember, everybody was up in arms. How can you tell me I gotta buy something? It's unconstitutional! And they cited every founding father, and they reached behind him and popped out another name and another quote and another idea, saying, well, it's unconstitutional! Turns out the founding fathers would probably not be in line with you. Because according to this guy, in July of 1798, Congress passed and John Adams signed an act for the relief of sick and disabled seamen. Now what this was, this was the creation of a private hospital operated with government money to help these sailors who were sick or injured or whatever by mandating that they pay a little over a percent of their pay collected by the employer, sent to the government, doled out to these hospitals for the sole purpose of taking care of these folks. Now, understand, this was the fifth Congress of the United States. This was the fifth one. So the founding fathers were against it, because these were the founding fathers. They were sitting right in the room. They didn't have to go, gee, I wonder what the founders meant when they wrote this. No, they'd go, hey, John, what'd you mean when you said that? So they passed this, and understand, back in the old days there, back in the 1790s, being a sailor was tough business. And it was the way our country grew. We were trading with people, and you needed to keep those trade lines open. You needed the industry to flourish so that the country could flourish. So you had these private merchant ships who needed workers. So you had a government who said, you know what, we need to make sure that business gets its workers because they needed bodies. So government bailed them out, provided a safety net, gave them health insurance, and it was mandatory health insurance, paid for by taxes that were taken from people's paychecks. And those were the days when Congress still used their common sense, which is all I kept here the floor. We're going to replace this job-killing health care bill with common sense. No ideas, no plan, no, this is what we're going to do. No. Just common sense. Oh, how wonderful. We're going to have common sense. So when I'm lying on the ground having my heart attack, I feel so much better knowing that in my wallet, that little card just says common sense. I feel so much better. Now, understand, going back to this, because this is important, this act for the relief of the sick and disabled seamen, it did a number of really interesting things. It created a marine hospital service. These were a series of hospitals built, operated by the federal government to treat the injured and, you know, kind of keep a track on what diseases were coming back, almost the precursor to the CDC. So as these sailors were going all around the globe, breaking ankles, whatever, you know, back injuries, whatever, and or coming back with God knows what ailment or what germ or what disease, they had a place to go. And if the sailor wanted to work, and this is in the law, if you wanted to work, you had to pay. There were no ifs, ands, or about it. There were no free riders. There were no, it's my constitutional right to buy whatever I want. No. Either you did it or you didn't work. And that's pretty much how it works in Europe now. They take taxes to pay for what they want. Now, we don't want to do it. We want to be able to be a society who we get everything for free. We can mooch off of somebody else. Or at least that seems to be what they're doing. Now, as the maritime service expanded, not just going across the oceans. Well, when it was going up the Mississippi or the Ohio rivers, they expanded the plan to cover those people as well. So when I hear this bizarre claim is, well, the Constitution doesn't say anywhere that the United States could mandate anything. I look to the Fifth Congress. I look to Thomas Jefferson, the president of the Senate, who was okay with it. You know, and I look to this and I go, you know, there's got to be some sense here. There's got to be some rational thought here. And when I go back to the Republicans saying we need common sense, isn't common sense making sure that everyone has health security, Jake? Isn't that the common sense approach?
Well, you noticed and you touched on it. They keep throwing out these not signing words. We have, you know, we don't want socialized medicine. We need common sense. I didn't hear one proposal, not one from any of these people. I heard your girlfriend go out in the well of the Congress, and boy, she was at her best, just flailing away about the cornerstone of this administration and this socialized medicine. You know, again, I'm probably going to make you mad because she's your girlfriend, but, you know, maybe you need to send her an email, Rick, and straighten her out a little bit, my dear.
That's chauvinistic, Jake.
There's only three countries in the world that have real, by the strict definition, socialized medicine. Many countries have a national health care program, but there's only about three in the world, strictly by the definition, that have socialized medicine.
Yeah, I know a guy who...
But then again, why worry about the facts and reality and the truth?
I know a guy who grew up in Austria. And he said, we are absolutely the working people of this country, the laughing stock of the globe.
I do believe that.
Because we allow this kind of stuff to go on. We allow the corporate special interests to deny us this simple security. And it is. It's a simple security. And I go back to, you want to create jobs? And this should have been the argument right along from the Obama administration. You want to create jobs? Take that health care thing off people's back. Allow them to go out and use that entrepreneurial spirit.
And yet, isn't it amazing that most of the people who oppose it, well, most of them are conservative, and they puff their chest out and they get outraged when you criticize America, blame America. No, I'm just pointing out that, what is it, the 36th, the last time I saw it, when they compare the healthcare systems of the Western industrialized world, 36th? We can't do better than that?
What number?
Come on. 36.
There you go.
How's that?
That's good. But at the end of this, what it comes down to, and our next guest is, I think, going to talk to this, it comes down to having some security and having some peace of mind. I mean, you know, I've got three kids. I worry every day something could happen to them, and maybe my insurance won't cover it. And I've got very good insurance. I worry all the time, though. What happens if I lose my insurance? I've got three kids I got to worry about. Mm-hmm. And I think every parent thinks that way. I think every person thinks that way, that, you know, what happens down the road? And we should have some measure of health security. We should have some measure of security in knowing that if we or a loved one gets sick, we're not going to be homeless. We're not going to be bankrupt. We're not going to have to deal with not only helping those who need the help, who are fighting the illness or fighting through the disease, and also worrying about if we're going to have to pay our bills or if we're going to have a home. We shouldn't have to worry about that.
Well, and haven't the other side been, and you talk constantly about this radical self-interest, a lot of people on the other side, it's a perception of how it affects just them. Well, you know what? That's not the right attitude. If we're really going to look at this, first of all, the other side has been good at perpetrating myths. Beyond that, they have to understand we're talking about the financial and economic future of this country, which is directly in correlation to how we have addressed health care.
We're right back after this with Stacey Ritter.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The Supreme Court ruled on Wednesday that background checks of scientists and other government contract workers do not violate constitutional privacy rights. After the September 11, 2001 attacks, background checks were extended to companies and universities that play a role in projects funded by the government. The court overturned a previous ruling by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that said the background checks of contractors were a violation of privacy. Justice Samuel Alito wrote on behalf of the court that the government has wide latitude when it deals with employees, and that includes contract workers. However, Scalia and Justice Clarence Thomas went further by writing a concurring opinion suggesting informational privacy is a right that does not exist. Scalia went on to challenge the concept of informational privacy rights, calling the idea farcical. He wrote that there is no right deeply rooted in our history and tradition that bars the government from ensuring that the Hubble telescope is not used by recovering drug addicts. The case before the Supreme Court was brought by 28 veteran scientists and researchers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. Since August 2009, workers have been in negotiations with a number of hotels in San Francisco. One of those hotels is San Francisco's Grand Hyatt. The workers, represented by Unite Here Local 2, on Tuesday, gathered to let their concerns be known. The hotel has been the focus of strike action and boycotts, with the union charging that Hyatt hasn't bargained in good faith while trying to reach a fair contract. The two sides are scheduled to meet again on February 1st as negotiations head into the 16th month. The union has also launched a boycott against Hilton Hotels in San Francisco. Some of the issues the workers are working toward in negotiations with the hotels are a fair pension, affordable health care, and reasonable workloads. Greensboro, North Carolina received tough employment news on Wednesday when American Express announced it would be shuttering a service center. The end result of the closure will impact 1,900 workers. American Express Senior Vice President Bob Geringer tried to put a positive spin on the closure in a memo to employees. He wrote, "We have 1,900 people who are affected by this decision, and therefore we have 1,900 possibilities. Many of the workers could end up being transferred to other U.S. service centers or possibly work from home."
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
And looking at this healthcare discussion, I agree with Wendell Potter, who said, you know, I have no idea how we lost the messaging war on this. The right, they spent all their money going after the mandate, saying, well, you can't force me to buy anything. Socialized medicine. And we somehow lost the message. And to me, the message is very simple. How do I protect my family? How do I, in the case that my children get sick, how do I make sure I don't lose my home? How do I make sure I don't file bankruptcy? And right during this whole discussion, we met Stacey Ritter, who had just really a horrible story to tell. That's why I've asked Stacey to come back as we're going and fighting through this again. Stacey, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks.
You know, I often use you as an example of strength, of determination, but also of what's wrong with our health system in this country. Can you tell us a little bit, tell the listeners a little bit about your story?
Well, it started when my twins were diagnosed with leukemia, and we had to go in and have stem cell transplants and chemo and radiation and all of the horrible things that are involved in that, which is very, very expensive. My husband stopped working to help me out with my son, and I was pregnant at the time also. And due to that, we had to take COBRA. Well, we were fortunate, I guess, to get COBRA coverage, but that's very expensive. And payments along with your other basic living payments like mortgage and electricity and food all drove us into bankruptcy while my twins were going through the transplant. And then to make matters worse, once everything was over, as far as inpatient was concerned, they started dealing with the after effects of the treatment, which was a stunt of their growth caused by damage to the pituitary and hypothalamus glands, which then required them to have a series of shots every day for years to come of growth hormone, in which our first insurance company, after a couple required tests, agreed to pay for. And then when my husband's work changed insurers, the new insurance company decided that, yeah, it wasn't medically necessary. They didn't care that the doctor said it was and that the previous insurance company paid for it. They decided on their own with their specialists that it wasn't necessary.
Just arbitrarily, it's just not our policy. Tough luck. But what happened, you know, and I hear this, and this is an interesting point because I hear this all the time from my friends on the right who say, I don't want the government between me and my doctor.
Rick, the scariest part of all of this was the only person standing between me and my doctor was the insurance company. They were the people standing there. They were the people telling me, no, you can't have this. My doctor was furious because, and to quote her, she said, I can't stand that they use cookbook medicine to diagnose my patients.
It all comes back down to the profit, though. It all comes down to how much they can put into their investors' pockets, into their shareholder pockets.
Very true.
Now, I'm looking at this discussion that the Republicans, they repealed the health care bill. It's not going to go anywhere, but they repealed it.
Right.
So I guess my question is that since they have repealed this, they basically want to take away from you the few things that were in this that I think could have helped you had this been in place a few years ago.
Correct. Yep. You know, and to go back to your point that you had made earlier on the show, I do have what I need now because I called them out on it, because I fought them on it. I'm getting the coverage. I shame them if it's possible to shame those people by calling them out publicly in covering this medicine. So I have mine. But what about all the other people? What about all the other people that they got to, you know, do this to on a regular basis who didn't have the energy to fight them? Or those people still need our help and they still need our protection. And that's why I refuse to be quiet.
How are the girls today?
They're doing well.
Good. You know, because one of the things I also wanted to talk about, you know, they keep pushing this idea that we want to do away with pre-existing conditions. And I look at your daughters, and I would think leukemia is a pre-existing condition.
Being a woman is a pre-existing condition. Having acne is an existing condition. So cancer, yes, definitely. They would definitely be a pre-existing condition.
So now by repealing this, now we go back to square one where it's okay to deny people coverage for pre-existing conditions. It's okay to go back into people's pasts and find maybe they took an acne drug so that you can deny their policies or a practice called rescission. That I think the Republicans are okay for. With I don't see them paying the penalty that I think folks like you should be out there screaming about.
Absolutely. They are not held to any sense of liability. Like, they can do whatever they want. And they'll never be accountable for it. They have they're outlaws. They can do as they please and know that there's never going to be a consequence to them because we allow it.
And I don't understand why we allow it. I don't know. I'm still grappling with how it is that they were able to co-opt this message. And because I think Potter is absolutely right. They beat us on messaging, though we were right. Even though there were stories like yours, and I could go through 100 other stories of people who have, you know, gotten sick and they've ended up losing their home or losing their job and a whole bunch of other negative things. How did we lose that?
Well, they won on fear. Fear mongering. They cried, it's going to be socialism. It's going to be... They scared everybody into believing that they were on their side when really it's smoke and mirrors.
You know what scares me? Honestly, Stacey, you know what scares me? The pictures that you brought to our movie event, the one we showed the movie Sicko, those pictures scare me. It scares me that that could be my children, that I could have to deal with the horrors that you've had to go through to fight to get the care that they need to keep them alive and still worry about if you're going to have a place to live. That's what scares me.
Right, and it should scare everybody because, like I said before, we had full coverage insurance. We had good insurance. It doesn't matter how good your policy is. Once, without consumer protections in place, the medicine that I fought for them to cover is in my policy. It is a medicine they cover. It's the exact brand they cover. It is something that is covered under my policy, but they were still able to say, no, we don't think it's necessary. You can't have it.
And how did they tell you? I mean, this is the part I love. Every person that I talk to, everyone tells me they get letters in the mail. Nobody ever tells them to their face. You never talk to anybody. It's always just a letter in the mail. Sorry, denied.
Yes, yes. And because I appealed it, each letter came with a different medical director signing it. I don't know who that medical director is. I don't know what their qualifications are. I know nothing about them. I just have to take their word for it. You know?
And I got to be honest, if I were you, I'd be taking no one's word for it because, you know, as a parent, I'd be camped out on somebody's doorstep.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think you did a lot of that, you know, because we put a video up on our site at therickssmithshow.com, and I suggest people go take a look at it because at the very beginning of the video, there are some of the pictures that I was talking about that are just heartbreaking. And then there's you standing up and going to the CEO's house and saying, hey, help us.
But of course, never would he be able to look me in the face and talk to me. There's never any response from him. People are afraid of our government. I got the government to look me in the face. I got to shake Nancy Pelosi's hand and look her in the eyes and get her help and support. I got, you know, these are people that we can go to, and they're accountable. That CEO of that company, I will never be able to go to him. He will never be accountable for what he's done. So I think people should be a little more conscious of who it is they're afraid of.
Well,
who the real enemy is here.
Right, exactly. And you pointed out one of my key arguments in this. I can't go to the CEO's office, or I can't go to the building and raise a stink. I'll get arrested. I can go to my congressman. I can pick up the phone and talk to my representative and raise a stink and not have to worry about being arrested or thrown out.
And if you can't, then that's somebody you can get kicked out of office.
Exactly.
Don't go for them again. You can't fire the CEO.
Only the shareholders can do that, and the sad thing is most of us don't have the kind of money that it would take.
That's right.
And that's the sad part about all this. This whole healthcare industry is based on how much money investors can get out of it, and it's set up in a way that your misfortune is their gain.
There's a price on all of our heads.
And, you know, I look at this and I go, there's something wrong with that kind of a system. There's really something wrong with where if I'm going to have diabetes or a heart attack or leukemia, someone's benefiting from that. It just seems perverse to me.
It really does, especially in this country, the United States of America, where we claim to be so humane and we're angered at other countries for their, you know.
We claim to be a Christian nation. That's one of my favorites.
What would Jesus do, Rick? You think Jesus would turn his back on all these people? No.
Well, Jesus would just touch them and make them all better, so we would have had national health care. Jesus would have been. I've heard that before. He wouldn't have been for socialized medicine because he would have just done it.
Oh, okay.
Figure that one out. But anyway, I'm glad to hear that the girls are doing well. I'm glad to hear that things are moving in the right direction for you and life is coming back to normal. I hope you'll stay out and keep fighting on this because your story is so important that people hear that this is what the Republicans want to take away. This could be you at any moment.
That's right, Rick. It won't stop fighting.
I know
you. It's going to be a long, tough road.
I know you won't. You're a champ, and I respect you, and I give you credit for everything you've done.
Thank you so much,
Stacey Ritter. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show where working people come to talk.
Ocean of Rick Smith.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Film, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small. By giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
Our quote of the day comes from Matthew Skamarskivsky, Skumarovsky. Wow, say that 10 times fast. In his book, Evidence of an American Plutocracy, The Larry Summers Story, he says, quote, as big business feeds more top executives into government positions, floods elections with more money, and gets away with more costly and egregious crimes. It's easy to see that public interest is being replaced by private profit as the driving force in politics. This process is a vicious cycle since the effects it produces, concentrated wealth and political power, are also its causes. And I absolutely agree. I mean, when you see people like Imelt, and, you know, our guest earlier wasn't as down on him as the president as I am, but I look at someone like Imelt who's being put into a position of power. It's that vicious cycle where you've elevated the CEO to being almost a decider of who's going to have a decent life and who's not by the ability to move jobs in and out of countries, being able to take wage earners' ability to provide for their families away. And you give them now political power to even decide that on the political realm, not just the corporate side. That's enormously, enormously powerful.
Side likes to talk about the Constitution. Now, what do you think the founding fathers would say about what's happening here? You've always told me, Rick, and I'm sure you're right. You know, the founding fathers were very skeptical of corporations.
They weren't allowed to contribute a dime to politics. In fact, they were skeptical of religion as well, because they didn't allow priests or pastors to serve in public either. We seem to forget that as well, too. But, you know, sometimes you got to wonder. Bernie Sanders. Do you remember Bernie Sanders when he did his filibuster, that 8-hour filibuster against the screw job that would have happened to unemployed workers when they were holding unemployed folks hostage just so they could extend a massive pot of gold to the extraordinarily wealthy? It's coming out in book form, so you can look for it on bookshelves coming out here on January 28th. Nation Books announced this week it will be publishing that historic filibuster. The book will be called The Speech, a historic filibuster on corporate greed and the decline of the middle class. It will be available on ebook January 29th, in store sometimes after that. You're looking at an $858 billion deal that passed the lame duck session of Congress easily. Why? Because you had some weak-kneed Democrats who were, once again, scared off by the scorched earth mentality of the Republicans. So, good for that. I hope people take advantage of that. I would love to see it on DVD. You know, put it out there for people to watch over and over again. To me, this replaces Mr. Smith going to Washington. This is Mr. Sanders standing up for working people. And we need more of those folks. We need more people out there standing up fighting for us.
And we need filibuster reform also. In the worst way. In the worst way. And by all reports, according to American Rights at Work, they believe that they have the majority, in Congress who are willing to go along with it. Remains to be seen. For those of us from Pennsylvania listening to my voice, we still have one of our senators who's not going to support it. And it's not Senator Casey. It's Senator Toomey. And maybe you need to give his office a little nudge. This is very, very important. And supposedly the Republicans aren't. Some of the Republicans are not happy with the current filibuster rule. I mean, according to what I've read, Rick, this is what they want to do. They want to eliminate secret holds so that no one obstructionist senator can anonymously keep critical nominations and legislation off the table. They want to allow only one opportunity to filibuster on any given measure. They want to make sure that once senators have had an opportunity to express their views, every measure or nomination is brought to a yes or a no at that point. And they want to, of course, they say they want to bring honor back to the filibuster by requiring filibustering lawmakers to continually hold the floor in debate rather than just placing a phone call or heading home.
We want up or down votes. We want up or down votes.
Well,
remember that?
It became too easy. I wonder under the old rules, like Mr. Smith goes to Washington, I wonder how many of them. I mean, I think the last one to do it was Bob Dole, if I remember, effectively. I think he, remember in the 80s when he filibustered labor law reform?
In the 90s.
I thought, okay. Well,
it was under Bill Clinton.
It was before he ran for president, yes.
When he filibustered the strike replacement bill. That was the only reason I voted for Bill Clinton, because he said he would pass that.
Which was labor law reform. But he's the last one that really did it the right way. I wonder with the kind of Congress we have, with some of them kind of frissy, I wonder if they would have the guts to get up there and for, you know, 18, 20 hours at a time filibuster the old way. I mean, it does need reform. I mean, for the sake of the country and for the sake of the Senate of the United States getting anything done, it absolutely, now is the time to make logical, concrete changes to that procedure.
Well, I mean, the mere fact that we couldn't get anything done during 2 years because you had a recalcitrant Republican Party who would see nothing, they wanted nothing done. They were asked time and time again to participate. They were asked for ideas during the healthcare debate, of which they came up with none. What they came up with were the same old failed, tired plans of the 80s and 90s that were set aside back then. Oh, we need health. And more platitude than anything. We need choice. Okay. We need common sense. Yeah, I'm right there with you. What's common sense? It's common. But that's all we're getting out of them. There's no specifics. Now, when the specifics do come out, you know what they're going to be. Health savings accounts. It's going to be no mandates, even though they were for mandates back in the 90s, if you remember. The Republican Party, it was actually one of their plans. They thought that everyone should be involved in it, and I do too. So there's some room for agreement, although now, politically, they know it's a winner for them.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. This is one big kabuki dance. It's a charade. It's a
waste
of money
is what it is.
It's a play. They know that it's not gonna pass. It is not gonna pass. So they're getting out there and they're making sure that a conservative constituency sees them out there fighting a good fight. And once that's done, they're not gonna change it. And they know it. It's one big waste of time.
There's a word that goes with cluster. One big giant cluster. But I can't
that we
say
can't,
that.
We
FCC.
Can't, that we can't repeat.
One big giant FCC.
There you go. That's pretty close.
That's pretty close. Average price of gas in Harrisburg went up to $3.13 last week. That, they're saying, is 37.8 cents higher than it was a year ago and over 7 cents higher than it was last month. The Energy Information Administration, according to Patriot News, came out with the latest forecast this week saying that prices will average somewhere around $3.22 per gallon for April through September. The spike in gas price, say, is largely based on crude oil prices. Oil is being traded at more than $90 a barrel. According to the EIA, they put the likelihood of $4 a gallon gas at somewhere between 8 and 10% by summertime. You know, you go back to this again. We're being held hostage by not the big oil companies, really, but by that cartel over there in the sandbox. OPEC. And until we figure out how to get off of that juice, I mean, think about this stuff, $4 a gallon. Let's say it goes to $4 a gallon. That's increasing our trade deficit. That means we're buying more stuff from the Middle East than they're buying from us, and they have a whole bunch of money. Now, in talking about that, and as we've talked numerous times, that money then has to come back. All those petrodollars have to come back to the U.S. And how do they come back? Well, they come back and buying our roads and bridges and buying our infrastructure and buying companies and buying our debt and buying all the other stuff. They're not buying our products. So I'm in favor of making some kind of trade deal saying, you know what, you want to keep selling us oil? You're going to have to buy some stuff from us. But that can only happen. That can only happen if we get off the juice. You know, once a drug dealer's got you hooked, there's no reason for him to bring the price down.
But Rick, they
do. When they got you smoking crack on the corner, they're not going to say, "Oh, I'll give you a little more for that TV." No, it's going to be, "I'll give you less for that TV."
They do buy things from us, fighter jets, weapons of war. Oh, well, it's true.
It's true.
It really is true. Now, the second point is, I mean, let's be honest. You got to give these guys credit. From their perspective, I mean, they've been masters at telling us how much of a friend they are. And at the same time, every chance they get, to get a chance to squeeze another dollar out of us, they do.
And look, the
let's
oil companies,
be honest.
The oil companies,
and the oil companies, and the oil companies, you know, if you want to look at, you know, I shouldn't say that they're our enemies, but you know, the oil companies have probably done more to keep us on the juice than anyone else.
Absolutely.
How many patents have they drawn? How much political power have they used? How much of their political influence over the years have they used to forestall?
How many public transportation systems?
Public transportation systems.
How many electric cars? How much innovation? All of that.
Tax money into giving each and every consumer in this country, each and every homeowner, make it easier for them to, you know, use solar panels. The whole ramit of things that we could have done, and the oil industry fought us. Each and every mile of that journey.
Absolutely. So, but we got to start thinking outside the box. And I guess that's a bad metaphor for the next story. Undertakers in Australia. They're planning to use the crematorium to help heat their new headquarters. So, you know, they're getting off the juice. A spokesman for the group says cremation requires the generation of very high temperatures. And that the idea is, at times of environmental awareness, put that excess energy to good use instead of letting it go to waste. So they're going to heat their new headquarters with the heat generated from the cremated bodies.
Isn't that nice?
I thought thinking outside the box. No, they're actually burning the box.
So that nice warm feeling you have, you could say, well, you know, thanks, Joe.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. State Representative Sid Michael Kavulich, stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Get a good job, people, pay you. Okay. Money. It's a cash. Grab that cash, people, pay. smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Thank you, California. And you too, Florida, Maine, Missouri, and 32 other states that intend to send a very special gift to Texas, namely their radioactive waste. Now there's a gift that truly keeps on giving. Of course, Texas asked for it. Well, actually, only two Texans. They had the clout to open a private radioactive waste dump in our state. First approved in 2003, the 1,300-acre site, which endangers freshwater aquifers that supply water to thousands of people in West Texas, was originally meant to take waste from just two states. But now, thanks to the care of insistent Texans, the dump is being opened to 36 more states. Who are these dump-on-Texas enthusiasts? One is a right-wing Dallas billionaire named Harold Simmons. He's chairman of a corporation named Waste Control Specialists. WCS's specialty is hustling government contracts for its own fun and profit. Indeed, Simmons' outfit is the sole company in the whole USA to be licensed by the Texas Environmental Agency to import this waste into our state. Now, from stage right, enters Rick Perry, the Texas governor who rose from being a Texas A&M cheerleader to leading cheers for the Simmons dump. Why is Perry so peppy for radioactive waste? Because Simmons is his second largest campaign money man, having dumped $500,000 into the governor's reelection effort last year alone. Only 2 months after November's election, the commission overseeing radioactive waste disposal voted on January 4th to increase the profitability of Simmons' dump by letting him haul in waste and profits from 36 more states. All six Texans on the commission were appointed by Perry. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you're keeping score on this exciting game of quid pro quo politics, it's $500,000 for Perry, untold millions for Simmons, and zero for the people.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.com.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Look it hard to make a left. Reach out from the red. Far the shore, left the canyon.
Website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Now, the other day, I got a press release that caught my attention. The title of it was "Blue Collar Workers Have a Voice in Harrisburg." That was not something I was expecting, given what happened in November and what I'm expecting going forward. So it's somebody I absolutely had to talk to. I've got Representative Sid Michaels Kavulich on the line. He represents the 114th Legislative District, just north of us here. Representative, welcome to the program.
Rick, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
You know, grab my attention. Blue-collar workers have a voice in Harrisburg. That, I got to be honest, like I said, the last thing I was expecting out of this new legislature.
Well, Rick, you know, I come from an area. My mom and dad, good, hard workers. My father owned a tavern for years, worked. Growing up as a kid, I remember him starting work at 9 o'clock in the morning, getting done at 2 o'clock at night. My mom worked for the Garment Workers Union. She was a dressmaker for, oh my gosh, even after the age that she was able to retire. And so, you know, and just growing up in northeastern Pennsylvania, a good, solid working area with a great work ethic. And that's what I hope to bring to Harrisburg.
Well, I'll tell you, we need a whole bunch of voices like that, because the reality is what I've been expecting and what I'm hoping doesn't happen is I'm expecting to see attacks on the standard of living of workers in this state, starting with the wine and spirit shops, those people who do make a decent living. I see them being under attack here in the coming months.
Well, you know, we have to, I think we need an atmosphere, a culture in Harrisburg where we look to the people who represent us as elected officials. We look to the people that put us in office, and they're relying on us. And these are the people that need to have the jobs. And not only jobs, Rick, we need jobs that pay a family-sustaining wage. To put it in plain terms, we need to be able to put food on the table. We need to be able to put a little bit of money away for our kids for college and be able to put a little bit away where we can go for a week's vacation once a year. And, I mean, we need to have jobs that allow us to live in that manner.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, but how do you get to that point? Everything that we're seeing, especially being put in a situation where we're competing like with a country like China, where everything is pushing wages down, holding wages down, I don't see it getting any better here in Harrisburg as our new governor takes over with all the talk of slashing state workers' jobs. I just don't see us being able to do that without some legislative help.
And that's what I think, first of all, and we hear it over and over, and I know I sound like so many other people, and I sound like I'm on a campaign trip here, but I mean, legislators need to look at themselves first. I mean, we need to look at where we're able to save money, where we're able to cut costs. I mean, something as simple as contributing to our own health care, how much will that contribute to the state coffers and to help bring down that deficit? Now, with over 200 people in the House and another 50 in the Senate, I mean, it's a start anyway. And just things like that, simple things we've got to look at first to get started. And then we hear so many people say it's the job of government to create jobs. It's the job of government to allow industry to create jobs. We've got to find ways to provide that money, to provide loans, and let them know where that money is. So these small businesses, these homegrown, these Pennsylvania businesses can hire Pennsylvania workers.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I've always said it's the job of government to create an environment where business can grow. You have a good education system. You have a sound framework, infrastructure, be it, your road system, your rail system, all of that together. And it seems to me that, and I give Governor Rendell credit. He did invest in education. I think we need to do a little more. But we need to be investing in roads and bridges and all of the other infrastructure, broadband technology, all of these things to bring business here.
I mean, gosh, Rick, when you look at some of the – I was with the Senate Communications Office working for the past couple of years, and we did a story on – some of the bridges and the shape that they're in. And when you – now, this particular story was done down in southeastern Pennsylvania in the Philadelphia area. But when you go under some of these bridges and you look at the condition that they're in, they are a disaster waiting to happen. And we've got to make – we've got to do something to get this money for, as you say, for the infrastructure. We talk about jobs. We talk about money. Look at the opportunity we have with the Marcellus Shale right now. Again, we have to take our time with it. We have to be careful with it. I don't think we can jump into it too quickly because of the dangers to the environment and the risks to the environment. But what an opportunity we have here in Pennsylvania, but we've got to do it right. And we've got to make sure that our people here in Pennsylvania are getting these jobs and the jobs that pay well.
Absolutely. And they've got to be family sustaining jobs. And also the other thing that we're not seeing, and then the governor has taken this bizarre no tax pledge, which to me just, I don't know why you would handcuff yourself. It makes no sense. But, call it what you want. If you don't want to call it a severance tax, call it a severance contribution.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Call it whatever you want. But somehow we should be benefiting from what's under our feet.
How many, I know there are a number of websites out there that have the counter and the total going up every second how much money we're losing here in Pennsylvania. And getting back to the jobs in the Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania residents and Pennsylvanians getting the jobs, we hear from the drilling companies that the people here in Pennsylvania aren't trained. Well, then let's train them. I mean, this natural resource has been under Pennsylvania for millions of years. It's going to be under here for another million years or however long the earth is going to be here. Let's take our time. Let's train Pennsylvanians for these jobs to do it. First of all, let's work with our local colleges and universities to develop apprenticeship programs. And even before that, We do have people that are trained. We have pipe fitters. We have welders. We have electricians. We have people here in Pennsylvania that can do the job. So if you tell me we don't have people that are trained to do these jobs, I don't believe you.
No, I don't believe you. Yeah. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Representative Sid Michaels, Kavulich, representative of the 114th Legislative District. You know, and talking about that for a second, you know, the union apprenticeship programs. Don't cost the taxpayers anything, do a great job of training, you know, pipe fitters, welders, all of those things. They're moving toward that. The problem is we don't have laws on the books to help people organize. What we've got is a broken labor law system. And at some point, I think we have to move in a direction that will make it fairer for people to join together. I'm curious your thoughts.
And I said, well, I think it's going to be a tough atmosphere when it comes to allowing people in Pennsylvania to allow our union workers to do that, because it looks like there's going to be some legislation that's going to move in the opposite direction. But again, you know, those of us who support our union workers, these workers that get the job done, that do it in a fashion which is efficient, do it in a fashion, which, you know, we know is going to be quality work. I mean, we have to do what we can to fight for these people and at least make our voice be heard as they are trying to.
Right. You know, and the other part of this for me also is the environmental side of this. You know, I've talked to a bunch of people who are experts on this, and they're saying we're not out in front of this game yet. We're not out in front of what's going on, and there are disasters happening. What happens down the road when this industry takes off? What happens when you start seeing more and more of these needles poking into the ground? What's going to happen to our water supply?
I grew up in an area. The entire neighborhood where I grew up was wiped out because of mine subsidence and because of what happened when coal, that natural resource, was taken from the ground. When that was extracted, everything's wiped out, and there were no provisions in place to reclaim land. What we have to do is, first of all, take our time, as I said earlier, and as you have said. And there's a reason why New York isn't going, full speed ahead with this. They're watching what we're doing, and they're going to learn from our mistakes. Well, we've got to slow down, that we don't make the mistakes, that we make sure that these companies that come in here, that they are held responsible for environmental damages. If it's in terms of performance bonds, that must be available to the local municipalities immediately. We can't be waiting 5 and 6 years like we've seen in the past for cleanup of some contaminated sites to get this money. This money has to be available immediately to the municipalities where the drilling's taking place and where the damages are I hope not, but may be occurring in the future.
Yeah, and to me, I mean, the thought on this should be we should be expecting them to pay in advance, be a little proactive, because we know it's going to happen. It's inevitable. Things are going to happen. So we've got to have something in place right from the start to say we know these things are going to happen. Hopefully they're small. Hopefully they're things that can be remediated quickly and not too damaging to our environment. But we need to have the resources as they're coming in. And this is why I'm in favor of whatever you want to call it, a tax, a contribution, whatever. But I'm in favor of something pretty substantial.
And, Rick, why can't we even do something like if these drilling companies put up the money to safeguard against or to help in the event of any damages, and as the years go by, maybe they get,
incentives back.
Sure, given to them back as the years go by, where eventually they know that if they didn't do anything that's going to damage the environment, all of that money is going to come back.
That sounds perfectly reasonable. The question I guess I have for you, is something that reasonable possible given our political situation?
That's what I'm looking into now. I'm hoping that that legally something can be done in terms of legislation where these performance bonds can be posted or would have to be posted. And again, when you think about it, it's like a security deposit you put up when you rent an apartment. You get it back at the end if you don't damage the apartment. So I know we're talking in terms of money, a lot greater amount, but still we're
but
also
the risk,
talking.
The risk is a lot greater. I mean,
and we're also right, and we're also talking about companies who are making a heck of a lot more money than you or I are making.
Absolutely, I mean, and the risk, and you brought up coal industry, which for me is the example of what we have to look forward to if we don't do anything to get ahead of this.
That's it, and that's why we've got to just take our time. Look at it again. As I said earlier, the gas has been under the Pennsylvania for millions of years. It's going to be here. Just take our time. And again, even for the people who are benefiting financially now, the money is going to be there. Just let's take our time and let's do it the right way. So in addition to the money for the people who are benefiting, the residents of Pennsylvania and the landowners, they also still have the water to drink. They still have the safe bridges. They still have the roads to drive on.
I'm right there. And as I remember, is there not still a community up your way, up in that area that's on fire underneath it?
Oh, Centralia. That has been going on for so many, many years. And I mean, that's your shining example of what can go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, that should be something people are looking at and going, well, maybe we need mm-hmm. maybe we need some policy. So, and getting back to that for a second, because I got another minute here.
Sure.
You know, as we move forward in this legislative session, what are you expecting? I mean, this is uncharted territory, I think.
Yeah, it is, and really, as a new legislator, someone who, a little bit of my background, I worked for the Senate Communications Office for the past 4 years, had an opportunity to see. Cover meetings and see some of our legislation being developed. But I don't know. You know, it's new. As a Democrat, we're in the minority. But I also know it seems to me that there is a culture, or some of the elected officials in Harrisburg are starting to see what the people are saying. We saw how many were voted out and what a turnover we had last election. And I think that message is starting to get through. So I'm hoping. And at least from my end, I'm going to do what I can to reach across the aisle, work with the people on my side and the other side, to do what we can to get done what's best for the people of Pennsylvania, who we should be serving and we are serving.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But all I keep hearing from my extreme friends on the far right are deep, painful budget cuts that are going to harm working people and harm people in this state. And I hope that, and when I read your press release, the blue collar workers have a voice. That to me is what I want the voice in.
And I'm going to holler and I'm going to scream and also try to make relations that'll allow me to get some of that stuff done. But hopefully we'll talk periodically and I'll keep you updated on how I'm making out in my attempts to do that.
That's what I want to hear. Representative Kubulich, I appreciate your time. I look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Anytime, Rick. Thanks. Again, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Your proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on, yeah, good workers, good news to you out there. Around the good old union has come in here to clear. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, you go to therickSmithShow.com and download the podcast. We hope that the folks listening to the podcast will say hello. Drop us an email, rick at therickSmithShow.com. Recently, the Wall Street Journal published an article that I found interesting, highlighting the fact that most people who lost their jobs due to the conservative deregulation recession, found new ones at considerably lower pay. Over a third of the people who lost their jobs because of the Bush recession and found new ones saw at least a 20% pay cut. A 20% pay cut. Understand, we haven't seen this kind of pressure downward on wages since the last time the conservatives let deregulation destroy the country, let corporations depress wages since the Great Depression. These are real. These are sustained cuts. They are massive cuts across the country, and they've been caused specifically by the recession. So when we hear the Republicans going on and on and droning on, oh, we spend too much, oh, we spend too much, the reality is, it's the economic downturn. It's the fact that we had a collapse. It's the fact that they and a number of Democrats during the late 90s deregulated the financial sector and said, oh, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. I know we learned in the 30s not to do that again. We learned that lesson. And I'm sure that you'll be good stewards of the economy and you will, by all means, do the right thing. And so we're going to let you turn the banks, the boring old banks who gave out loans with 20% down. We're going to let you guys, we're going to give you a set of dice. And you can just roll the dice and you can gamble it all away. We know you won't do that. We know you learned your lesson. You're smarter than that. And, that is exactly what they did. And you look at the wages that have been falling. Prices have been stagnant. We're only rising slightly. And the banks and creditors are making out like bandits over this. Why? Because wages are down. And inflation is almost at nothing. Understand, I do believe inflation is good for people who are in debt. But you look at most of the working class of this country, we are in debt. Which is why we have this all-out war on inflation. In addition to the all-out war on inflation, there's this war on wages. And the banking sector, the investor class, they're winning. And this isn't a grand conspiracy. I'm not talking conspiracy theory here. This is business. Like the mob used to say. Nothing personal. It's just business. So you look to China. China is corporate America's wet dream. They can't exploit Chinese workers fast enough. They can't exploit the infrastructure there fast enough. And yesterday, a listener sent me this interesting piece, a transcript from the December 2005 Federal Open Market Committee hearing, where this Dallas Fed chair, the Fed president, Richard Fisher, he was complaining about how many Chinese goods were flowing into the U.S. He was pointing out the massive amount of goods that were causing deflation in the U.S. You know, lower prices, lower wages. But he wasn't saying it was a bad thing. What he was angry about is they weren't able to exploit it more. They weren't able to do more. And it was the union's fault. You know, it was the unions at the ports who weren't allowing the products to come in. Understand, in China, they've got export-only ports. They've got entire ports dedicated simply to exporting things. Everything goes out. See, in these ports, because of those evil union rules, there's a balance. But here's the thing. He didn't think all those products coming in were a bad thing. Wasn't angry over that. He was angry over the fact that they weren't able to do more, that they couldn't get more Chinese goods and more goods from low-wage countries into the U.S. Now, you'd think, at least I would think, and we've talked about this before, Jake, as business people, they'd want you to have a couple of bucks in your pocket. They'd want you to be able to at least buy the cheap crap from China. But that's not what happened. And if you go back through our history a little bit and you look at the 70s, where wages kept going up because of inflation. Now, inflation was getting a little out of hand. We had printed way too much money. We were having a little problem. The OPEC thing was killing us. But as inflation crept up, wages kept up with it. And you saw people like my grandparents, who in the late 60s bought a house, were paying $70 a month. 10 years later, that was a day's pay. Because you had inflation, you had the rise of wages. They were completely out of debt. Now understand, the wealth class hated the fact that my grandparents owned their home and they were not in debt. And that's when they started this war on inflation. And understand, as we keep pushing inflation down, we keep pushing wages down, you see this massive pressure downward. You're going to see more people filing bankruptcy. You're going to see more people in deep debt and not getting out of it. Because here's the thing. Once you slap that credit card down, I don't know if you've looked at your bill, but I looked at mine the other day, and my bill was $1,900. And they said, you know, I'll pay over the next 20 years like three or four times that.
Wow.
Once they got that debt over your head and they can keep their thumb on you and those rates keep adding interest, and your wages keep going down, they are making massive profit. And they ship jobs overseas. They push for trade agreements, allowing them to ship their stuff back. Look, this has been going on for years. We are just at the end of it. So what you've got inflation is conquered. We have seen almost no inflation. But wages, we've seen no wage increase, in fact, going down. And when Volcker took over in the late 70s, one of Carter's appointments to take on this inflationary monster, he went after the unions. And when Ronald Reagan came in, went after the unions. Why? Because those union people said, you know what, we want a living that's going to at least keep up with inflation. And the companies are like, well, no, not going to do that. So they started moving jobs overseas. Wages stopped growing. You didn't see as many strikes. You didn't see people joining unions anymore. But you saw unemployment go up. You saw poverty going back up. You saw a lot of the negative things happening. But what you did see is a massive gulf between those who have and those who don't. And I look at this thing with China. I don't blame them for what's going on. I absolutely don't. They're doing what we're allowing them to do, which is eat our lunch without any repercussion. We're right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The Supreme Court ruled on Wednesday that background checks of scientists and other government contract workers do not violate constitutional privacy rights. After the September 11, 2001 attacks, background checks were extended to companies and universities that play a role in projects funded by the government. The court overturned a previous ruling by the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that said the background checks of contractors were a violation of privacy. Justice Samuel Alito wrote on behalf of the court that the government has wide latitude when it deals with employees, and that includes contract workers. However, Scalia and Justice Clarence Thomas went further by writing a concurring opinion suggesting informational privacy is a right that does not exist. Scalia went on to challenge the concept of informational privacy rights, calling the idea farcical. He wrote that there is no right deeply rooted in our history and tradition that bars the government from ensuring that the Hubble telescope is not used by recovering drug addicts. The case before the Supreme Court was brought by 28 veteran scientists and researchers at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. Since August 2009, workers have been in negotiations with a number of hotels in San Francisco. One of those hotels is San Francisco's Grand Hyatt. The workers, represented by Unite Here Local 2, on Tuesday, gathered to let their concerns be known. The hotel has been the focus of strike action and boycotts, with the union charging that Hyatt hasn't bargained in good faith while trying to reach a fair contract. The two sides are scheduled to meet again on February 1st as negotiations head into the 16th month. The union has also launched a boycott against Hilton Hotels in San Francisco. Some of the issues the workers are working toward in negotiations with the hotels are a fair pension, affordable health care, and reasonable workloads. Greensboro, North Carolina received tough employment news on Wednesday when American Express announced it would be shuttering a service center. The end result of the closure will impact 1,900 workers. American Express Senior Vice President Bob Geringer tried to put a positive spin on the closure in a memo to employees. He wrote, "We have 1,900 people who are affected by this decision, and therefore we have 1,900 possibilities. Many of the workers could end up being transferred to other U.S. service centers or possibly work from home."
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO.
Workers' Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. You know, our fiscally responsible, business-savvy conservative Republicans in the House, they have rolled out their latest hatchet job on the budget. They claim that they're going to be able to axe over $2 trillion from the budget over the next 10 years. So they have thrown down the gauntlet, one could say. A few of the cuts they've been talking about have been the ones they've been throwing around for quite some time. Their hatred of Amtrak, for instance, their hatred for the National Endowment of the Arts, and their outright vehement despisal of public broadcasting. We've gone down this road. We've heard them going over it. But again, it comes back to this discussion over spending cuts. You know, do we want public transportation? Do we want to be able to get off the juice at some point? And if we do, we've got to invest in it. What they're talking about doing, they're talking about doing away with smart investment programs. And a couple of the things that I wanted to talk about are kind of interesting. They are, right from the beginning, they want to be able to say that they're going to go back to spending levels of 2008. which would be great if that were possible, but I don't think it is. I think we need some of the programs that are in place to keep the economy at least buoyed up a little bit. Because I think if you prematurely take away some of the aid to states, which I guess is coming this year, we could see a large number of bankruptcies, Jake. And you'll hear in the city, they're talking about bankruptcy of the city of Harrisburg. Where they're talking about 100 cities across the country going bankrupt. It's not, you know, at some point you got to look around and go, not everybody is that irresponsible. And I go back to the housing crisis. Everyone's saying, well, you know, it's just a bunch of irresponsible people who spent too much. And my answer is no, not all of these people were irresponsible. This is the recession. This is the collapse of conservative ideology. This is the collapse of conservative economic policy. These folks lost jobs. They didn't spend too much. They're not bringing in enough. Why? Because they lost their jobs. It's the same thing at the state level. It's a revenue problem. But no, the mean we keep hearing is, well, you know, we got to do like they do at their kitchen table. We got to tighten our belts. Well, what does tightening your belt mean when you're a government agency? Tightening your belt means that when someone's lost their job, you cut off the unemployment. When someone is sick, you cut off the health care. Is that what tightening our belt means?
I think they're going to be very, very surprised, and I think they already, some of them got the message. There's not a lot to cut from the budget, and when you look at the state government, contrary to the conservatives.
They want to cut all of the Medicaid FMAP money, the stuff that came from the stimulus to help keep states from collapsing. So rolling it down. Now understand, all of this tax talk, all of this spending cut talk, all of this stuff is pushing it to somebody else. Look, we need some of these programs, and I would argue the vast majority of them we have decided that we need and that we want. Now the cost is who's going to pay for it, and how do we push it down, because the wealth class doesn't want to pay for it. Do you think the investor class of this country gives a rat's behind if a guy who worked on the railroad for 50 years has a decent retirement? Do you think that they care about someone who works sweeping streets for 50 years? Do you think they care if you're going to have Medicare and you're going to have health care in your old age? Of course they don't. What they care about is, hey, where am I going to buy my 10th house? Where am I going to vacation? What vacation home am I going to buy in Aruba? That's what they care about. And what we've got to be talking about, what people have got to get fired up about, is when these spending cuts come up and when they start talking about, oh, we need to cut spending, we need to cut more spending, we need to talk about what programs those are and how they affect us in the working class. Understand, I just want our politicians to do what's the best interest of the people. Well, which people? Which people are you talking about? You know, when I hear that, I go, well, you know, to be honest, I think the politicians are doing a pretty good job for their people. You and I, the people who work for a living, not so good. And you go through this list, Jake. Subsidies to Amtrak to help people get to work. They're going to cut all of it. Gone. Boom. Done. Nothing. They're going to cut... They're going to cut the National Endowment of the Arts, completely gone. They're going to cut the National Endowment for Humanities, gone. The Public Broadcasting System, gone. The Wilson Center for Subsidies, gone. And again, this travel, they have a travel budget. They're going to cut that in half, which I got to be honest, I'm not against. If it means that we're not paying for their travel costs. You know, like Corbett's idea, what we need to do is we need to get rid of the cars, the leases for the cars, which in the long run is going to end up costing us more. So, you know, to have this political, you know, pandering thing that they've got here, how much is it going to cost me in the long run? They want the Department of Energy to stop issuing grants to states for weatherization. They say it's going to save them over $500 million. I think that's not a bad plan. Help Granny insulate her home? I think it's a good idea. Help her cut down on her heating bills? It's a great idea. You know why? Because we're probably giving her money through LIHEAP so that she can not freeze to death in the winter. So if we don't insulate her home, it's going to cost us more on the LIHEAP side. Or am I missing something?
No, you're dead on.
But we got people who don't think this way. They just want to make their political point. They just want to score their points. You know, I go back to that story we were talking about the health care for the sailors. They saw a problem. You know, the Fifth Congress of the country, they saw a problem. They passed a law. Said, you know what? All you folks, you're going to benefit from a health care system. We're going to take some money from you, and you're going to have that. Boom, done. No running around in the streets going, oh, this is socialism. Not that they knew what socialism was, but we're missing something here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, when we start talking about cut spending, and like I said before, I've talked to people who are got their ear to the door where these transition teams are sitting. There is no office of waste, fraud, and abuse you can just close. It's not there. There's no magic spending scalpel that's going to close the budget deficits. And selling off our assets is another bad idea. This idea that, oh, well, you know, all we have to do is just sell off all of our stuff. That's a really bad idea, especially in this economy. And you go through and you look at what the Republicans are proposing in their big tax slash plan. They want to sell off a whole bunch of government property. Do you think during this time of economic crisis, do you think you're gonna garner top dollar? I mean, really, do you think you're gonna be able to do that? I'm telling you, you're not. But these are the business people. These are the business folks who are business savvy, the fiscally responsible, who would take an asset of ours and sell it off fire sale prices. That doesn't make a lot of sense. And you go through a lot of this stuff. They're going to be cutting funding for the presidential campaigns because there's a presidential campaign fund. And I guess over 10 years, it spends about $775 million. This is that matching stuff. Trying to move us away from corporate dependence. They want to cut that completely out. Why? Because they want us dependent on corporations. At the end of this, aren't you getting it? Don't you see it? Because I think it's going to become crystal clear as we move forward that these folks want to take us back to a time where there were two classes, the handful who had and everyone else. And everyone else scrambling for crumbs with a government who does nothing to help them. In fact, they want to go back to a time where government was the tool of the corporation to keep down the people who didn't have. The government was there to ensure property rights of the ownership class. That's what we're moving back to. So, you know, say, oh, I'm going to keep my gun and say, oh, I don't want to pay taxes and I don't want to raise taxes on the rich people. Understand where we've come from. We've come from an era when we used the state to hold down the working class. And we did it for years. That's where they want to go back to. They want the Lochner Court back. They want liberty of contract. They want to be able to say, you know, Jake, if you're willing to work for a penny an hour, you can work for a penny an hour. If we can import labor willing to work for food, we should be able to do that. That's the argument. And we're moving more and more towards that. And as we continue, and look, this whole 10th Amendment argument is not going away. They really push this states' rights stuff because they know that that's a race to the bottom. They know that that's the corporations being able to hold on to power. And going back to, you know, we got to repeal the 17th Amendment. We the people don't want to actually vote for our senators. We want the legislature to do it like they used to. You know, so corporations only have to buy so many people. Amazing stuff, man. And this is where we're going back to. And I think as we move forward and Republicans show their hand more and more, the more they feel emboldened by some of these really draconian cuts, the more I think people are going to hopefully wake up.
You know, if you read your history, you know anything about the political history of Pennsylvania, I mean, you talk about the corporate interest only have to buy so many politicians to have this massive power. You go back in the history of Pennsylvania when the railroads controlled, they handpicked who would be our U.S. senators.
Yeah.
And they controlled.
Absolutely.
They controlled this state for a long time.
One of my last ones that I want to talk about. They want to eliminate the National Organic Certification cost sharing program. The government certifies that when you buy some kind of fruit or a vegetable or anything, milk or whatever, that it's certified organic. They want to do away with the government having any part of that, so that the corporation, will police itself. Do you think you're going to actually get organic anything after that? Not going to happen. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Your call is 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Thank you, California. And you too, Florida, Maine, Missouri, and 32 other states that intend to send a very special gift to Texas. Namely, their radioactive waste. Now there's a gift that truly keeps on giving. Of course, Texas asked for it. Well, actually, only two Texans. They had the clout to open a private radioactive waste dump in our state. First approved in 2003, the 1,300-acre site, which endangers freshwater aquifers that supply water to thousands of people in West Texas, was originally meant to take waste from just two states. But now, thanks to this pair of insistent Texans, the dump is being opened to 36 more states. Who are these dump-on-Texas enthusiasts? One is a right-wing Dallas billionaire named Harold Simmons. He's chairman of a corporation named Waste Control Specialists. WCS's specialty is hustling government contracts for its own fun and profit. Indeed, Simmons' outfit is the sole company in the whole USA to be licensed by the Texas Environmental Agency to import this waste into our state. Now, from stage right, enters Rick Perry, the Texas governor, who rose from being a Texas A&M cheerleader to leading cheers for the Simmons dump. Why is Perry so peppy for radioactive waste? Because Simmons is his second-largest campaign money man, having dumped $500,000 into the governor's re-election effort last year alone. Only 2 months after November's election, the commission overseeing radioactive waste disposal voted on January 4th to increase the profitability of Simmons' dump by letting him haul in waste and profits from 36 more states. All six Texans on the commission were appointed by Perry. This is Jim Hightower saying, if you're keeping score on this exciting game of quid pro quo politics, it's $500,000 for Perry, untold millions for Simmons, and zero for the people.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at Lowdown.com.
The Blue Blood, see red. The Rick Smith Show.
That's kind of the scenario they're setting up. The more messaging I hear, the stories that I'm hearing are setting the scene that they want states and local governments to be able to file bankruptcy so that they can wipe their debts clean. They can do away with all those pension obligations, all those pesky pension obligations. They don't have to take those retired people. And, you know, I got to be honest. From a business perspective, great idea. I think it's a great idea. All those people who voted for Republicans in this last election, all those senior citizens, all those senior citizens who said, yeah, cut spending, yeah. And then they look at their pension and they go, well, where'd my pension go? Oh, that's right. I voted for Republicans to cut spending. My pension was part of that spending. Oh, didn't realize that. And we move forward in all of this, and we're going to hear more of this. It's not going to come to an end. They know they've got a winning message because they've convinced you already that our problem is that we're just out of control spending. We're just spendthrift. We're that woman with we're Paris Hilton. We're a nation full of Paris Hiltons who do nothing but spend. And all we have to do is we have to reel in those spending people. Everything will be fine. But that's not how it's going to work out. They're going to make their bones off of your back. And when they file bankruptcy and they allow states and they allow cities to do it, the first thing they're going after is you. They're going after the workers. They're going after those pension funds. And you know what? It may not be you today, but it's going to be you eventually. Because what happens when you take someone's pension away and they can no longer, and they're 70, 80 years old, they can no longer fend for themselves? What happens? Then they start going on all the other programs that are out there. But Rick, the Republicans are going to do away with those too. And that is a very valid point. And it's that moment that I want to see Granny in the street with pitchforks. It's that moment where we go back to have Coxie's army walking from all across the country to the Capitol to have a rally, to have a march on Washington, to have people living in the streets of Washington. Maybe that's what it's going to take, Jake. Maybe that's what it's going to take.
We keep saying the problem right now is that not enough people are suffering, or they aren't suffering enough. I hope not. You might be right. Maybe ultimately that's what needs to happen. More people need to suffer. And we do go to the streets and really exercise our right as Americans, right to protest and a right to ask questions of the people who we loan the power to. And I think all too often people forget that, the concept. Some of the Tea Party, I got to give them credit, they're accurate in their outrage. They're accurate in the fact that they have a right to understand that the power is derived by the people. You want to talk about the Constitution? The Constitution, the brilliant men, they said the power vested in government comes from the people. It is on loan from the people. We have every right in the world. We have every right in the world to regress government for our problems. Not enough people care. Not as of now, Rick. That needs to change.
But what are they telling us? They're telling us cuts to entitlement. And I was watching C-SPAN the other day, and all we kept hearing was, there's a giant sucking machine, and it's spitting out dollars. These laws are spitting our dollars out, just spitting them out to these entitlements, these old people with their Social Security. How dare we have to pay for that? I mean, that's the mentality. And if you look at polling that's been done, a New York Times CBS poll has put overwhelmingly that people say, you know what? They prefer cutting spending to paying higher taxes, except when you're talking about Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security.
And you know what the irony is, Rick? I've heard some, Congressman Simpson and some on the other side call the senior citizens in their generation greedy and selfish. But yet, I mean, why? Because they've been successful. Their generation was successful. And that's why, and I disagree with you on this one, I do think that their generation is the greatest generation, not just because they were the part of the generation that saved us in World War II, but because if you think about it, Rick, this country probably made more strides as far as working people and economic strides, probably in their generation than any other generation, by far. Now, you can say, well, maybe they were just lucky to be at the right place at the right time, but they had the courage and they had the fortitude to go out there and fight for their share, and they won it. And I don't blame any senior citizen for fighting and fighting like you know what to protect every dollar that they get from Social Security and Medicare.
Nearly two-thirds of Americans choose higher payroll taxes for Medicare and Social Security over reduced benefits. Two-thirds. Now, what you've got on the other side of this, you've got people who say, well, you know, our deficit's a very serious problem. 70% say it's a serious problem, and I agree. It is getting into the range where it is a serious problem. But our problem is not spending. Our problem is revenue. For too long, we've been giving away our revenue. We've been giving it away to the very wealthy. We've created a billionaire class. You know, you look at the Forbes 400. Before Reagan came to office, that 400, there were no billionaires there. Now it's all billionaires. All billionaires. No matter how you fudge the numbers. And I've done it. I've gone back to the first year of the Forbes 400, and I've recalculated all of the income based on today's numbers. There are no billionaires. We created them by giving them massive amounts of tax handouts. And when you keep giving them money, they have the ability to make more money. And has that money filtered to anybody else? Has the benefits that were reaped been given to anyone else? Did everyone else enjoy the party? I would argue most folks didn't. When we gave out that $550 billion that was supposed to create a million jobs during the Bush years, did you million people get your $550,000 apiece? No, because the jobs weren't created, but the money was given away anyway. And you look at project after project where we're handing funds away, saying, here, take it. And nothing's coming back. At some point, don't you think we have to start banding together? And this is where I have always reached out to my Tea Party friends. You know, you may have this hate of government, but you've got to admit they're the only entity that can stand up to multinational corporations. Now, I'm not anti-corporation. I think they're a very useful entity. You need to have entrepreneurs in your economy. You need to have the drivers of invention. You need to have the drivers of profit. I'm all in favor of that. But you have to have some rational restraint. You have to. Or what you get is what we have now, a greed class. And, you know, you can say that, you know, selling off the liquor stores and selling off the turnpike and selling off all the state assets and opening up the state museum and selling off all the artifacts and selling everything we the people own collectively to the wealth class to solve our short-term financial problems is a good idea. I don't. I think it's a horrible idea, especially in a down economy, and especially when you're talking about a greed class where it's never enough. When will it ever be enough? When will Warren Buffett have enough money? Never. And I love this argument. Well, if we taxed Warren Buffett, he would stop working. I just absolutely love that ignorant argument, because if we were to tax him, he would stop pursuing what he's doing. I mean, how silly is that? It's almost as dumb as the argument, well, you know, if we put a severance tax on the Marcellus Shale, they won't come. If there's a tax, they won't come. I mean, really, do you buy that? Does anybody buy that? Because if you do, I got a bridge. And in fact, I got a bridge that might not fall down. Just absolutely amazing stuff. But we buy it because it's constantly in our ear. Constantly.
Their answer is that if you reduce taxes, you're going to have more people that are going to be entrepreneurs, Rick, and magically, they're just going to stimulate the economy.
Yeah, I buy it. Okay. I'll buy it. On paper, great plan. Just like I think it was Red Right 88, the year Cleveland was in the championship game, and Brian Sipe threw the pass, Red Right 88, that was picked off in the end zone. When they drew that plan up, it was a touchdown. Problem is, there was somebody else in the way when they actually tried to go out and make the plan work. Ultimately, they lost. And that's how I see these models. Oh, you know, if we give them all the money, they'll create jobs. On paper, oh, that's fantastic. Beautiful. Touchdown. Yeah. Problem? There are people standing in the way. When the ball comes by, somebody's going to take it. And that's where we are with our trade agreements. That's where we are with the poor regulatory structure that we have, because we won't fund it. That's where we are.
Well, you and I have discussed this numerous times. You know, tax breaks don't create jobs. Demand does.
Show me one road that a tax break created. Show me one school that a tax break...
Absolutely. You're right. Now, take that to the next natural conclusion. How do you create demands? Well, for one thing, you have to have people with money. And how do you get money in their pocket? People with Oh, I don't know. Good jobs, maybe? You don't have good jobs, there's going to be less people with money in their pocket. You're going to have less of the demand.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Your last chance to get in. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Together. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We can't have it. We can have it.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Blue Blood Zero. The Rick Smith Show.
That's the question. How would you like it if someone was watching you? I saw this article in the Patriot where they're talking about putting cameras here in Harrisburg, and you know I read some of the blog posts and they go back and forth. The comment on the website where if you're not doing anything, should you care? Personally, for me, it's a taxpayer issue. Cameras have been ineffective. They don't. To be honest, I don't think they deter crime. I think they just move crime around. I remember in Allentown when they put up these, they put all these lights, like street lights with the red, yellow, and green on the exit ramps, on the entrance ramps. And at the end, when it would turn green, then you could go. It was supposed to regulate traffic. And it was a whole bunch of money they spent on this. This is why I have a problem with gadgetry. They spent a whole boatload of money putting these things in. And you know what they're doing today? Nothing. They turned them off because they didn't work. Because again, when you write it up and you think it through and you put it on paper, hey, great idea. We can regulate the flow of people getting on the highway so it doesn't back up. Then what happened is you had the traffic backing up in a different direction, causing a whole bunch of other problems. And then they just turned it off, wasted all kind of money. That's what I see with these cameras. But one theme popped into my head that I thought was interesting. You know, it's one of these misinformation moments, Jake, where someone says, well, if the cameras aren't in your house, then you're not being watched 24/7. Because, you know, in order for the government to put a camera in your house, they need a search warrant. And it needs to be supported by an affidavit of probable cause signed by a court of common pleas judge. And I said, oh, how pre-9/11. Because, honestly and truthfully, we live in the post-9/11 world. We live in the post-9/11 world, and thank you to the Patriot Act. That's not necessarily can come into your house, and they can search your house and your computer and all of that stuff. They can put cameras on there. And then they can go get a court order after the fact. Don't you love the Patriot Act? Yeah. You know, I did have a conversation with someone who was all gung-ho for the cameras, you know, saying, I have nothing to hide. And I said, well, okay, if you have nothing to hide, then you don't mind if I search your pockets. Well, what do you mean? You've got nothing to hide. You don't mind me searching through your wallet. Well, why do you want to search through my wallet? Well, it could be contraband in there. If you've got nothing to hide, how about you open up your trunk and let me look and see what's in your trunk? You got nothing to hide, you know, I just follow you around all day. If you've got nothing to hide, why does it matter? People see you all day long. If you've got nothing to hide, you know, how about I just follow you around all day?
And isn't it amazing that the Founding Fathers understood that simple concept?
But it's this, again, it comes back to this false sense of security that people seem to think that they have. That, oh, I just want to be safe. And I go back to what my mother-in-law said about the nitwit who did in Arizona. Well, they show up because the government should keep us safe. And, you know, she was yelling. And I said, well, okay, well, I think you're acting a little strange. I think we should have you locked up because that's not how normal people react. Again, I go back to what I've said before. I can keep you safe. I can keep you safe from all the outside forces. But who's going to keep you safe from me? And that's my problem with these cameras. One, I think it's a waste of taxpayer dollars because we're going to be reliant on it. And we're going to, instead of doing proactive police work, where you put policemen on the streets, walking up and down the street, being a visual deterrent, we're going to rely on the cameras to be our eyes and ears on the streets. And that is going to be a failure, in my opinion. There is one thing that I am in favor of having cameras for. There is. I just saw it. Thank you for the people at Berkshire Mall for having a camera set up on the water fountain. Thank you. Because this woman was texting. I don't know if you've seen it.
I saw it.
It's hysterical.
That. Oh, my.
Thank you for putting the camera there. She was texting, and she walked right into the fountain. That gave me a good laugh, and thank you for the camera.
And they showed her, and she just flat out disappeared. Yep. I mean, she took a dunk. And she said, oh, nobody helped me. No one helped me.
She wasn't there long enough for anyone to help. And then she hired an attorney.
She wants to sue.
And she wants to sue because, you know, they laughed at her. Well, it was funny. I would have laughed at
you. Yeah, but it gets
and
better.
And the thing is the reason she's suing is because they should have been concerned for her. But she wasn't. She jumped right up and ran off. There's no concern. I would have laughed, too.
Well, they found out since...
She's a small-time petty crook.
Well, yeah, they found out that she took one of her friend's credit cards and spent thousands of dollars on it and was taken to court over it.
Well, I don't know what that's got to do with this. And when I read that in the newspaper, I'm going, well, why is that important?
Well, it takes away, in my mind, it takes away a little bit from her credibility.
Nothing.
Oh, it does to me.
Nothing.
I mean, if she wants to sue over something like that, she's obviously, you know, a gold digger looking for some easy money.
No. Anybody who would sue over something like this is obviously a gold digger. The fact that they dug that up, to me, again, tells me that there's too much control of people have over other folks' lives. Now, she was stupid. She walked into the water fountain. Someone should smack her upside the head and say, sit down. Don't walk into the thing again.
Well, I mean, I think you're being kind to her. I mean, it is fraud to take.
You're stupid.
To take somebody's credit card.
And she, as I understand it, went to court for that, correct?
I'm not sure. She might be waiting trial.
What I'm asking is, what does that have to do with this? It has nothing to do with it.
I guess the point is, in today's world, Rick, when you do something like that and your name gets out, what's the first thing? Well, let's find out what we know about this. So we'll check the public records. Oh, yes. But she's scheduled to go to court.
What's her being stupid got to do with her being a criminal?
What is she?
I mean, to me, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, it's pretty hilarious. I mean,
the video's hysterical.
If I did that, I would laugh at myself. I really would.
And I would be there to laugh at you, too.
And you would. And if you did, I would never, I don't think there's a day go by that I would not let you forget that. And you would do the same to me. I mean, people sometimes, you know, you just got to laugh a little bit, loosen up.
But, you know, I love the argument that, well, they should have been more concerned for my safety.
I mean, what were they supposed to do?
Well, they should
have a change of clothes there for her, take her to a store and say, since you fell in there and it was in the mall, hey, it's on us.
Now, I could see that credit card thing would be a story. If she was shopping, doing that right now, I could see that being a story. But it means nothing.
But texting, and then they want to know why there's laws which outlaw texting while you're driving. I mean, this woman was walking and didn't see this.
You do know she's going to be the poster child for that.
You
do know that the anti-texting driving people are going to put this on as Exhibit A.
I don't think you should be texting while you're driving. I really don't. It's bad enough. I mean, you and I, and to be honest, I do it too. But you know what's scary? You're driving in town. You have these intersections where people are going in the middle lane and waiting to turn. And there's cars all over the place. And they're zooming by. And you see invariably this one person. And I'm not trying to be sexist here, but it's usually a woman. She's on that phone. And she might even be, you can see she's engaged emotionally. And all her attention is riveted towards that telephone call. Never mind the cars are zipping by here and she's in the middle of an intersection. And could cause an accident that, I don't know, maybe could kill some people.
You're right. Absolutely. You're sexist.
Okay. Could be a man, but I gotta tell
you. Do that. What are you talking about?
Okay, but the people I've seen just happen to be women and men do it too. The point is, it's bad enough that people do it with the phones. And by the way, I think in Harrisburg, you're not supposed to be doing that. And in Lebanon and a few other cities. But texting, absolutely, that should be outlawed when they're driving. Absolutely. No question in my mind.
We should just have voice-activated texting machines, which I do believe they have.
They probably do.
Generally on the phone, I have a hands-free set that I use. Because, when I was driving a truck, I used to do an awful lot of talking while driving.
And that's, that's a whole different ballgame there when you, if you have your hands free. That to me, is a lot different.
Yeah, but, going back to this video camera thing. I think folks are looking at this as the secret bullet. This is that silver bullet that's going to solve our problems, and it's not. What it's going to be is it's going to be Exhibit A at the trial. So when someone walks up to you, takes your wallet or takes your purse or shoots you in the street, they'll have videotape of it. It's not going to keep you safe. This is the thing that I keep saying, folks. What we need is we need more boots on the streets. We need cops. And I think the cities view this as an opportunity to cut police spending. We can cut our workforce by putting these cameras everywhere. So I guess the question that I do have is, much like our healthcare system, much like everything we do, are we only reacting, or do we want to be proactive and do we want to maybe deter some things? Because chances are you got a cop walking up and down the street, somebody's not going to rob somebody. Just a thought. I mean, I look at Camden. Camden laid off half their police department, a third of their firemen. Now, Camden wasn't a great place to begin with. I mean, when I would drive through Camden, I would actually lock my doors. And anybody who knows me knows I never lock my doors. It's that kind of place. I mean, this is not your vacation winter wonderland. This is a very bad place. And now what they've done is they're going to make it worse. And how they've tried to spin it is, it's those police unions. They actually want to be paid. How dare they? How dare they want to be paid? And that's the kind of thing we're going to be seeing. We're going to be seeing it here, and it's going to start ramping up. It's going to ramp up soon, as soon as they start putting out when the attack starts. It is going to be fast and furious. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this to wrap things up. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. 2561.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
There's the hope. We don't get fooled again. On Monday, I'd really love to go to this. I would love to be a fly on the wall as Justice Anton Scalia of the Supreme Court addresses the Tea Party caucus in a closed-door, private, no reporters, no oversight, no we the people get to know what's going to be said meeting there with the Tea Party caucus and my girlfriend, the head of it, Michelle Bachmann. Again, you know, I look at Scalia and I look at the Supreme Court, and you've got to be afraid of what's going on. You just have to be. It's just amazing what they've gotten away with. Just especially when you look at that Citizens United case, just ridiculous. Anyway, House Republicans introduced a high-profile anti-abortion bill yesterday, the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. Which will permanently ban any federal funding directed towards abortion service. John Boehner said the issue of abortion is a crucial issue to the Republican agenda. It's the highest legislative priority. And that's why I've directed it to be H.R. 3. And I'm telling you, this abortion issue is going to come back with a vengeance thanks to this idiot in Philadelphia that we talked about last night. And I hope they... I'm again. I've said it before. I'm not a death penalty guy, but here's another guy who I would not be unhappy to see some harm come to.
For those of you who have been on board with this adult basic situation, adult basic was set up to cover people who couldn't get health care otherwise, people who made too much and didn't qualify for Medicaid and yet still couldn't afford to buy insurance. And there was a deal made a couple years ago that Blue Cross Blue Shield, because it was a nonprofit, with their excess profits, they would fund this. Initially, Governor Corbett said that he would be willing to reauthorize that situation, reauthorize that payment, and try to get it passed. He has since reneged on it, and what he wants to do is offer a very inadequate policy that Blue Cross Blue Shield will offer. It's pretty much, I wouldn't say it's useless, but it's very, very weak. Doesn't offer any protections for people with pre-existing conditions and only allows 4 doctor visits a year. It still costs about $140 a month. For those of you who, and that concerns me, because I believe the number is 42,000 people that are going to be knocked off of it. Some people really need this coverage. It could actually cost them their life in some extreme situations. The Pennsylvania Healthcare Alliance is going to be going up on the Hill on Monday. And for those of you who are interested and you want to participate, take the opportunity, take the time to go up there and talk to your state senator and your state representatives. We need to put pressure on these people because I think Tom Corbett is going to once again add those truly needy to make a sacrifice, and we need to hold his feet to the fire. You need to talk to your representatives. Pennsylvania job picture, Rick. According to the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry, for the 5th straight month, it has improved. The seasonal adjusted unemployment rate is down slightly to about 8.5% in December. The State Department of Labor and Industry figures released Thursday show last month's rate had fallen by a tenth of a percentage point from November. Pennsylvania's unemployment rate from the recession peaked at about 9.3% in July. The number of unemployed Pennsylvanians is down by 10,000 for the month to about 538,000. Now, at the end of the day, why did they drop? I mean, was it a good sign? Is the economy heating up a little bit, or is it just a situation where more people lost their benefits and are off the rolls? My guess is that a lot of this is simply because people lost their unemployment and they're off the rolls. I'm not so sure that we're even close to having this economy turn around.
That's because we haven't done any of the big things that need to be done. We've had the Republicans and a bunch of conservative Democrats, a bunch of corporate Democrats who keep singing this line. We need to cut taxes, cut taxes, cut taxes, cut taxes. And not invest in infrastructure, not invest in our country. We should be building stuff. You know, we should be building lots of stuff because we need it. You know, the roads and the bridges in this state, I don't know about you, they could use some help. A lot of help. I would love to have high-speed internet like other countries had, like Japan or South Korea. Mm-hmm. If we're going to compete with the Chinese and the Indians and the South Koreans, we've got to have, if not better, at least similar mm-hmm. internet access. And we don't. We're our speeds are pathetic.
And isn't it ironic that the countries that are pretty much kicking our bosses is moving up as far as their income within the nation. Nations that you don't necessarily think of as anywhere near us, South Korea, China, they have much better system than we do, much better internet system.
That's because they invested in it.
They
said, oh, it'd be a good idea that we had, some infrastructure to lure mm-hmm. those American mm-hmm. businesses away. You know, look, this stuff doesn't just happen by mistake. The Chinese are very smart people. Mm. Now, look, when an American company came over, when GE first came over there, you know what GE said? We'd like to have roads to get our product to the ports because we're going to need to get that stuff mm-hmm. back here to the U.S. so the consumers of last resort can buy it. Oh, and you know what? We could use an export-only port. So build us a port. Oh, okay, we'll be happy to do that. Sure. Anything else? I'd like to have high-speed internet and really good stuff so we can communicate back with the mainland and make sure our profits are where they should. And they built that stuff. Why aren't we doing that?
Basic stuff. Basic stuff.
But it seems to me, again, you know, they talk about common sense for healthcare. Well, this seems like common sense.
Well, let's go back to, railroads, high-speed rail. While China and some of these other countries, especially China, are building high-speed rail all over the place, trains that can go, I believe the one in China goes over 300 miles an hour. We don't have anything close to that. What do we do here in the United States? In two states, just since the election, where conservative Republicans took over, Kasich in Ohio, and the governor, the conservative governor who took over the reins of government in Wisconsin, both of them canceled huge rail projects. We're talking long-term, hundreds of thousands of jobs, jobs to construct it, jobs that would be created once it's built, and they said, no, can't afford it. We can't, it's unbelievable. I mean, infrastructure such as rail is an intricate part of a vibrant economy. And they don't want to not only invest it, but they're saying, well, we don't care about the jobs. We don't care about the jobs. It's more important that we are loyal to our political philosophy.
Not only did they say they couldn't afford it, they were gleeful in that the train is dead. I mean, they were gleeful. They were happy they were destroying the economy. I'm trying to figure out why. But then again, it goes back to they don't believe in anything of we the people. And that's where this whole Tea Party thing breaks down for me. If you don't believe in government, if you don't believe in we the people, because that's where we the people do things, in our government, then how can you look at this country and see it going forward? If your vision is anti-government, if your vision is destroying government, I'm not getting it. Well, and this is something we're going to have to be moving forward through over the coming months. As we continue the program. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, make sure you go to therickssmithshow.com. You can download our podcast. It's right there for your enjoyment. Also, you can watch the videos. You can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. We do answer all emails personally. Also, again, we'd love to have you participate. Hope you have a great weekend. The big games on the tube. I'm hoping the Jets win. I know you're... you probably don't care.
No, I actually, part of me, again, the underdog, I'm rooting for the Jets.
Me too. All righty. Well, hope you have a great weekend. We will see you back here. We'll see you back here on Monday. Monday. This has been the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You've been listening to the Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the good our sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the U.S.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Baikal.